Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call the Legacy Finance Division meeting to order. Want to start off with apologies for this afternoon. We had a bit of extended adventure on the House floor, so some of the bills that we heard would have heard this afternoon, we're starting off with today, and just kind of want to go with that. I don't know if anybody's had an opportunity to take a peek at the minutes. Representative Zhang, have you had an opportunity to look at the March 13th minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Zhang moves the minutes of the March 13th meeting. Any questions to these minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, we've got minutes approved. Thank you, staff, for your work on that. So we have many other layers of committees, so members will be coming and going. I believe healthcare is taking up something we might have talked about earlier today, and an environment committee, and Representative Heitzen will have to be in and out, and I believe capital investment is layered in there as well. So my apologies. I just want to kind of start, before we get going, to kind of lay the table of what we're looking at, and I've asked Ms. Roberts just to kind of mention to for everybody to hear, we've had a few requests, and I brought the little example of my desk paperwork, but we've had, and most of it happens to reside in the Arts and Cultural Heritage Park, but I just wanted to mention that we're a little bit over, and I think I'm just kind of giving you an idea where we're at. If we could get Ms. Roberts to kind of tell us where we're at, like a scorecard before, just the request of where we're at.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, based on the February forecast, the total amount available from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, assuming a 5% reserve, is $139.8 million. The total requests that have been introduced and heard or will be heard tonight total $175.6 million. So the total requests are $35.877 million over the available resources.
So thank you, Ms. Roberts, and just to kind of, so I'm not really good at math, but that sounds really close to $36 million over. And just to kind of give you an idea, and that so we have a little bit of a challenge of ourselves to sand the corners a little bit. I know Representative Green later has a suggestion how to solve this easily, but we'll move forward. We're pretty excited to begin. We have Representative Dean. Are you here?
Yes.
Please come up with your testifiers, and so I'll move as you're coming forward that House File 2360 be laid over for possible inclusion. I believe it's 2360. And so just in full honesty, just out of respect to everybody's time, we're going to really try to be pretty tight. And I do want to allow time for member questions and if there's somebody from the public that feels greatly moved. But please, Representative Dean, welcome to our committee. And please go ahead.
Okay,
we're excited to hear your story.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, and of course, always thanking the public for being here. Today, I bring before this committee House File 2360, a bill that would appropriate monies to assist the project costs for a mural honoring Prince. He was born in Minneapolis, Prince Rogers Nelson, on June 7, 1958. The first concert of his first tour on November 22nd, in 1979 actually took place at the Roxy in West Hollywood. While the first show he actually performed as Prince was billed as a benefit show, and that was at the Capri Theater on January 5th, 1979. Unfortunately, he lived a couple blocks away from the Capri Theater. He recorded his first album, which was released on April 7th, 1978, titled For You, in which he arranged, produced, and performed all the instruments. He later signed with Warner Brother Records and released his critically acclaimed self-titled album, Prince, in October of 1979. His last performance took place on April 14, 2016 in Atlanta, Georgia. One week later, the world lost Prince at the age of 57 due to an accidental fentanyl overdose. Mr. Chair and members, there is no one who is not familiar with Prince, his music, and his legacy to the state of Minnesota. And I'm going to end now and turn it over to my testifier, Sharon Smith Akasanya, to speak a bit more about the project.
Thank you, Representative Dean, and please state your name for the record. Welcome, and go ahead when you're ready, please.
My name is Sharon Smith Akinsanya, for the record. But thank you so much, Representative Dean. And I want to also thank Senator Bobby Joe Champion, who's also carrying the bill for us in the Senate.
We don't talk about this.
But is it okay?
You're fine, please.
Okay. Okay. But thank you, Chairman Lilly, members of the committee. I really appreciate the opportunity to stand here, actually sit here, representing the community to speak to all of you why it's so important that collectively we pull together to honor our Minnesota hero, our icon, our Prince, Prince Rogers Nelson, with an iconic mural. And in fact, before I forget, Tyka Nelson, Prince's sister, and the other family members bring greetings today. They are praying for this project. So as I said earlier, my name is Sharon Smith Akinsanya. I am a community member, I'm a community leader, and I am the CEO of the Ray McKenzie Group, which is named after my daughter, Ray McKenzie. It's a minority-owned, women-owned small business, and what we do is we work with top Minnesota corporations to help them attract, recruit, and retain professionals of color in the workplace and in the region to make sure that our region remains competitive so that we're not losing our top talent to cities like Dallas and Charlotte and Atlanta and Chicago. And so when I moved to Minneapolis 25 years ago, it was because my boyfriend wanted to work for Prince. And so I'm like, okay, young, single, no kids, let's get to the Twin Cities. Because Minneapolis was all the rage. Everybody wanted to be here. And Minneapolis was hot. So I eased on down the road from St. Louis, Missouri, to the Twin Cities. Now, to make a long story short, I was the one that ended up working for Prince, and I lost my boyfriend. But that's okay. But it was, it's okay, I'm good. But it was during this time that I worked with Prince that I truly understood exactly what Minneapolis had. I understood the genius, talent, and awesome philanthropist who was born here, who lived here, and who died here. So just like you, and as Representative Dean mentioned, we were all devastated when we got the news nearly 3 years ago, coming up on April 21st, that Prince had passed. Not our Prince. He was supposed to live forever. I mean, like, really? So, but Prince was gone. Our hometown hero, who gave the world Purple Rain, the movie, and the hit album, who released an album every single year. He was alive, and hundreds and more, and even thousands, some would say, still in the vault for the world to experience one day. Our Prince, who fathered the Minneapolis Sound and the director and producer of Under the Cherry Moon and Graffiti Bridge and countless of other short films and music videos that were produced either in whole or part right here in the Twin Cities or in the state of Minnesota, supporting the local creative community. So it was in 2018 when Prince's sister Tyka Nelson and I had a conversation about what can we do? What can we do to make sure that the world knows that Minnesota remembers my brother, remembers my former boss? And so we looked at the Dylan mural, which we loved, and we thought, well, Dylan is alive, and so maybe we can do something similar for Prince, who's passed. And so that's what we thought. We thought that a mural would be a place that the entire world could come see and visit and be with Prince. And then I went to my friends at the Hennepin Theater Trust. Tom Hoke was who was the president and CEO at the time. And we said, listen, we need to do this because, as you know, Hennepin Theater Trust helps to install many of the murals. And so we went there, and they thought this is a great idea. They were on board. And then Hennepin Theater Trust and I went to go and see Kelly Lindquist and Stacey Mickelson in Art Space. and they graciously and eagerly agreed to donate the space on the back of the Coles Theater building, and we cannot be more pleased. So then we got to work on securing our releases and permissions, and then, you know, who would we go to do the mural that would face First Avenue? And so we looked and see who did the iconic mural for Dylan, and we thought, why not Eduardo Cobra? Because here's what happened. Before Prince passed, I had begun to have conversations with then-Mayor Betsy Hodges about what can we do to honor Prince while he was living. And so we've been talking about some of those things, and one of the things we learned from Prince is that he didn't want a statue. His quote was, "They won't get my face right." So we knew that the face was something that was important to Prince, and nobody does faces better than the Brazilian muralist Eduardo Cobra. And so he has agreed to do the Prince mural. So, you know, we went to Hennepin Theater Trust, you know, that, and we got Cobra to do the mural, and that's everything. So Taika, Prince's sister, Prince's nephew, President, and I went and stood in the parking lot on the back of the Coles Theater, in the back of the Coles Theater building, and we imagined, we stared at that building together, and we imagined what the possibilities would be to have an iconic worldwide unveiling of the official Prince mural honoring our Prince right here for the world to see, because people are paying attention. They're wondering how we're going to acknowledge him. And not to mention the economic impact of such a Prince mural, where millions of fans will come to visit daily, monthly, annually, filling up our hotels and supporting our businesses, the memories, the stories. So it is my hope that collectively we will agree as a state that Prince should be honored this way with an iconic mural on the space donated by ArtSpace on the back of the stage house of the Coles Theater building for the world to see. Prince could have lived anywhere in the world, but he didn't. He chose us. He was born here, he lived here, and he died here. And oh, what a way for us to show the world how much we appreciated his contributions to us and to the world, and to show that we recognize that, yes, we loved him, but the world loved him too. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming today. I just can't imagine what a loss of a personal friend, but what a thrill as well to work for a treasure like that as well.
It was a thrill. It was a thrill. Thank you so much.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Dean, where are we at? I think we're...
Yeah, we're running close to time, yep. Chair Lilly. I did want, if members, Stacy Mickelson is here from ArtSpace, and he's prepared to talk to some of the conversations that have been going on, and, you know, the issue of how do we create the fiscal agent for all of this. So we're available for questions unless, you know, you have something specific that you want to say at this point.
I would like to put on the record, though, that ArtSpace...
Go ahead, state your name, please, then.
For the record, my name is Stacy Mickelson with ArtSpace Project based in Minneapolis. For the record, I would like to just address the issue of ArtSpace as the fiscal agent. We are working right now. That currently, as a placeholder, is fine, but it doesn't work in the long-term execution of this bill. And so we're working with some other partners to figure out where is the appropriate place to send this legislation, should we be so fortunate to receive the funds to do this mural, who's the appropriate fiscal agent. And we'll have that amendment to you probably within the next week or 10 yep. days, not certainly longer than that.
Thank you very much, sir, and thank you for your group offering your space on the building, because certainly you could sell that, I'm sure, and put a Coca-Cola ad or something up there, but what a
Prince
great.
Prince is better.
Yes. Representative Dean, is there anybody from the public that would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, any member questions? None. Representative Dean, any final comments?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I just want to thank you for the opportunity of hearing about this great project. I know that I was here when you were talking about there's a little bit of difference between the requests and the money that you have, but we hope that in the end that this project will be included in one of those that will be funded through the arts portion of the legacy fund. So thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 2360 be laid over for possible inclusion. All those in favor? Oh, I guess we're not, so we're laying it over. So, sorry. But thank you very much for coming down today. And again, I'm sorry for your personal loss, but our loss is a state of Minnesota.
It is a loss for our state. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair.
The chair's a bit biased. I have a singer-songwriter at home and a Berklee College grad, but they're no Prince, but they're...
keep them playing.
No. Thank you very much. Representative Claflin? So, please come up. I'll move that House File 2029 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Again, our apologies for this afternoon, but we're excited to hear your story this evening. So thank you very much.
Thank
Representative
you.
Claflin.
Thank you. And if it is all right with the chair and members of the committee, I will combine my testimony for House Files 2029 and 1017 because they're very similar subjects and however you wish to consider the actual content.
Any concern of members of doing that? I think we're okay. And Representative Coughlin, please. I'll move the other motion later on. But go ahead. Please proceed.
Thank you. Earlier this month, I read the article and then went and hunted around the Capitol myself for the women who are represented in our Capitol as statues or plaques. And Dr. Martha Ripley and Clara Euland are the only women who are represented there. And they are both leaders of the women's suffrage movement. And I have to recognize that Minnesota was allowing some women to vote in some elections, and that even after passage of the 19th Amendment in Minnesota and nationally, some women were not allowed to vote. Not all people had the right to vote. The racial discrimination continued to restrict voting rights. But the bills that I'm bringing for your consideration tonight are to recognize the achievements of the women's suffrage movement. They will go a long way to connect us with the history and connect that history to our present debates about civic engagement, voting rights, and also our place in that national movement. And tonight I'm wearing white to be part of that continuing movement. The suffragettes traditionally wore white. The Women's Suffrage Monument that's on the Capitol grounds also played a role in taking on a leadership position myself in public service. And it's part of why I decided to run for public office, to keep working to make life better for other people. And when I was first learning about women's suffrage in school, I had never heard about Minnesota women's roles, Minnesota men and women. Local women and the work that was being done by family members of my friends. Having an event to commemorate the 100th anniversary of passing the 19th Amendment will help us to connect our history and current issues on topics of voting rights, the effects that we can get from civic engagement. This is still very important to recognize the work that was done and the benefits that we continue to reap from it. And I'm hoping I can get my dates right. September 1919, we passed, ratified the 19th Amendment here in Minnesota. That means this September will be 100 years since that happened. And in August 1920, the U.S. finally had 2/3 of the states ratify the amendment. And there will be a nationwide celebration of women's suffrage in 2020, celebrating 100 years. So the first bill, House File 2029, I have to get them straight here. This would create a monument in South St. Paul, which would recognize the first women who voted after the 19th Amendment was ratified nationally. They happened to vote in South St. Paul on a water bond. The other bill, House File 1017, would create an anniversary commemoration program with a day of recognition and a connection to the larger celebrations going on around the state. And I have folks with me tonight who can speak to both of those bills.
Thank you, Representative Claflin. I don't know which are yours first, but go ahead when you're ready, and please state your name.
Good evening. My name is Deb Griffith with the City of South St. Paul. And as Representative Claflin said, the 19th Amendment was ratified on August 26, 1919. On August 27th, there was an election held in South St. Paul in which 90 women voted for the first time. We have photos, we have newspaper articles, we have the actual minutes from the city council meeting saying how many women voted, how many were yes and how many were no, and it was divided up between women and men. And we went back further prior to that, and it was only listed as men that voted. So we know that that information is accurate. We also know that the first woman that voted, her name was Marguerite Newberg. She voted at 6 o'clock on August 27th, 1920. And she voted for the water bond, which was an $85,000 water bond to build a water tower. And so 89 other women voted with her. We also know that there were two ballot boxes, one for women and one for men. Just in case the actual ratification was not true. We've also been told, and we can't verify this, that the women took the votes home just in case they needed them for the next day. So in South St. Paul, we would like to erect a monument in the spot where the first woman that voted, and that is in Lachey Park. It was the original City Hall, and that's where she voted. And we would like to share this not only with our residents, but also with the state and the nation. This was the first in the nation for the women to vote, and we are very proud of that, and we want to share that with the United States.
Thank you very much. Are we going to hear from your Honorable Mayor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, yep. For the record, James Francis, Mayor of South St. Paul. Mr. Chair and committee members, I shared the story before when we talked about this, that my grandmother, who lived to be 105, who was also elected an official in South St. Paul, was part of the suffragettes movement in that she was part of getting the word out. She did not vote at the time of voting. She wasn't able to vote for another couple of years, but she did do her part. And when I was sharing this information about coming here and talking with my daughter, who is 11 years old, this is a little-known fact, this voting in Minnesota. It's not well-known, so we're kind of a secret, so to speak. And it's a statue commemorating this would be amazing, not only for our city to recognize that, but for our nation and for our region. But as I was telling my daughter this, she suggested that I bring Girl Scout cookies to tonight's event, just to help remind you that, girls are working hard, and we need to recognize them. And I said, you are right. How much are those, young girl? And she sold me these cookies that I would love to give to any of you today that would like them. Just again to reiterate the personal fact that we all have somebody in our life that is important to us, that has been elected, that is continuing to fight for us, and it would be wonderful to honor them, and we would be very honored if you would consider that and putting that statue in the city of South St. Paul. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll give $20 to your daughter's cause, but I think the rest should come from Representative Hansen.
So. she's already drained me, so it's on the house, and I appreciate the consideration.
Make sure you get this.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Can you speak quickly though about the other bill, because we're doing both at the same time, and I think it's important that we talk about that quickly.
Yes, if you would like to move this one, we can move on to the other one, or.
Okay, I guess I will. I thought we were discussing them both at the same time. I'll renew my motion that House File 2029 be laid over for possible inclusion. So Representative Claflin, that's laid over for possible inclusion. So now I'll move that House File 1017 be laid over for possible inclusion. And, okay, I thought we were going to do them both together, so I'm a little, go ahead, Representative Claflin.
Thank you. The introduction to this bill is the same. This is the bill that would have the event commemorating the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, and I have with me Michelle Witte from the League of Women Voters, and again, Deb Griffiths from South St. Paul, and Jill Zahnheiser from the National Campaign for the 100th anniversary.
Hi, please go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, good evening. Yes, again, I'm Michelle Witte, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters for the state of Minnesota. And very thank you, Chair Lilly and committee members, for the opportunity. We both Jill and I did submit our full written testimony, so we'll let you with that. But I did want to just quickly add one point to all of Representative Claflin's great words, was the excitement about being before the Legacy Committee. I was very excited as a Minnesotan when this amendment was passed as a way to commemorate what we know to be the gems of Minnesota, our arts, our natural resources, and I would say another is our civic engagement. Minnesota remains the number one state in the nation for voter turnout. We have a strong engagement through groups like our own, League of Women Voters. We also are celebrating our 100th centennial as the four mothers knew when we got the right to vote. This was only the beginning. And so we have a very strong tradition of civic engagement that would also, I believe, be honored here and have the opportunity to learn. So the second part of this, the second bill really will help us reach across the state to all Minnesotans. The good news for the Legacy Committee is, as a centennial event, it happens only once every 100 years, so we're not going to be coming back for additional dollars. So I think that's a real bargain to be able to help us especially build on the tradition of civics education that is happening here at the Capitol as well, to spread that education across the state, to be able to better resource other communities and smaller communities across the state through coordination and support for activities. So again, we thank you very much for taking this time to honor what we think is one of the great cultural legacies we have, is the ability for all of us as women to be sitting here with all of you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you for your testimony. Sorry for the distraction earlier. Representative Claflin, anything?
We have one. Nothing?
Representative, I have some member. Oh, you have another testifier? Just 1 second, please. Wait. Okay. Hi.
Hi, I'm Jill Zahnheiser, resident of St. Paul. I'm on the steering committee of a national coalition that formed several years ago to encourage the commemoration of 2020, the 100th anniversary of women getting the vote in America. That coalition includes the National Archives, the Smithsonian, the National Women's Historic Park in Seneca Falls, all of the National Women's History groups. So the outreach that we've already done in Minnesota, as my testimony indicates, suggests that there's a lot of interest around the state in doing events that are local. Not everything has to happen in St. Paul. Not everything has to happen in Washington when we're celebrating an important anniversary. So we're excited that this bill may allow the possibility of grants, small grants, to a lot of local libraries, local historical societies, who are thinking about how they can connect the suffrage story to local women and men in the area that were working for the suffrage movement. So there's a lot of interest nationally, and I'm hoping that this bill will be passed so that we can help generate interest around the state, and as well as help with the kind of the grand event, September 8th, to celebrate the Minnesota ratifying the 19th Amendment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone from the public that would be interested in being heard? Seeing none, Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. really interesting proposal being brought, Representative Claflin, and I think there's really some good stuff that is being worked on here. I have three little girls at home, and they're all excited by little, varying from 8 all the way to 15. So they think that they're ready to drive and take on the world. But I have just one question. I think I see in the first bill here, line 1.7, that's the 2029 bill, an appropriation $300,000. And then I see in the bill we're currently discussing, 1017, line 2.2, a $200,000 appropriation. So I see basically $300,000 for the statue, and then $200,000 for, I think, on line 2.4 and 2.5, it's for commemorating the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment. So a pretty significant amount of money being spent here for the second half of this. And I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, is this something that we have traditionally funded out of these accounts? Or, you know, there are some sensitivities there in the sense that maybe we could be described, and I'm hearing from some folks, they may describe this as the party side of the appropriation and the historical side in the first part. Are we going to run into any trouble here? I just want to confirm that we're in good shape, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your comments earlier and then now your question, Representative Heitzman. I don't know, you know, this is some of the things that have fit in the arts and cultural have been a bit fluid, if you will. You know, I think we did a sculpture for Dan Patch, I believe, in Shakopee. So there's been some of that that's kind of gone on. And
just to be clear, you know, Mr. Chair, I think
the education component that is spoke about in the other bill, 1017, I guess I'm not certain that we've done that per se. So I don't know the answer. But I definitely think it's of historical merit. And, you know, so certainly noteworthy that way. I mean, you would hope that it would maybe fit into education, but sometimes, you know, we're often the home of, because we have some money, so.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. So just to be clear, I think that what we're doing in the first bill here, 2029, I think there's lots of examples of that we can see coming out of these accounts. The second half, I just wanted a clarification, and I don't know if there's someone that could follow up with us later, or if there may be some note examples. Maybe the bill author is aware of other examples of this kind of outreach being done using arts and cultural heritage money, and maybe that could give us, you know, kind of some precedent. If there's not, well, then maybe there could be some follow-up later.
Representative Heitzman, we're very blessed to have star staff here because I wasn't aware of this and had forgotten. I'm sorry, but there was some recognition of folks with the recognition of the Disability Act, for example. So we did do an effort to bring attention to that statewide, and there was some support of that. So there is some, the window's been cracked a little there, you know, and some of that, so there is some precedent. But it's a very good question.
Okay, appreciate that. Maybe that crack staff could give us a ballpark idea of what we were talking about. Was it a large number, small number, similar number? And we could follow up later on that too, Mr. Chair.
Okay. There's some movement over here. I don't know if they'd prefer to wait or Ms. Bonds.
Chair members, for that particular appropriation for the Council on Disability to celebrate the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act anniversary, it looks like they did receive an appropriation for $55,000. I don't remember if all of that was for the celebration, but I believe it was, or at least various different aspects of it, which I think included also some historical preservation as well.
Thank you, Ms. Mullins. Representative Heitzman?
Yeah, I appreciate that. That helps, and I think that maybe if we could spell this out a little bit different so there's no questions. We're not buying party hats and cake or anything like that, but those things might be appropriate with private money here. This is more of a learning opportunity for folks, a statewide effort to try and bring attention to the date and to what was accomplished at that time frame, in that time frame. So.
Thank you, Representative Heitzman. I believe my understanding is it is to really bring this statewide, and to it's more education. It isn't just a bunch of cake. It's to really inform people on an important historic event that happened here, and issue that happened in country and Minnesota. So, any additional questions, Representative Claflin? Oh. Go ahead.
If you would read my testimony, I'm Jill Zahneiser. I talk about the importance of and the history of government funding things like this, which teach us how democracy is created and how democracy is maintained. The 19th Amendment gave the right to vote to half the population. Half the population. That's a huge event. And we fund things like 4th of July events. We fund all kinds of things that are about making sure our democracy continues. In my opinion, we are rather threatened as a democracy right now in terms of civic engagement issues. And this is one way to begin to reach across partisan lines, I think, with this kind of bipartisan event. And the history of this movement isn't something that's past. It's also very present. Voting rights are a huge issue now, and again, this is something that is instructive for everybody in terms of how do we maintain our democracy.
Thank you very much for the discussion, and we'll take a look at that. Any final comments, Representative Claflin?
Thank you. I do believe that the Legacy Committee and the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund is an appropriate place to ask for this money to fund a commemoration because this is part of Minnesota history. This is part of our cultural legacy. There's ongoing benefits seen by the passage of the 19th Amendment. There's a study done to show that, want to get my example correct, that exposure to political empowerment impacts educational attainment levels of economically disadvantaged folks and goes on to further improve their employment outcomes. Commemorating the 19th Amendment is more than commemorating history that was in the past. This is history that we are still part of. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative. Thank you very much for guests. I was lucky enough to hear some of this in, I think, government operations or something, but it's a great discussion, and thank you very much. One of our friends, the Ampers, does 90 seconds on each different thing, and I think the city of Hutchinson, Minnesota, I wasn't aware of, they formed the new city when they first formed, and then they included the women had the vote there. So I don't know exactly how that fits with this. It wasn't the whole state, but it was definitely women were very integral in forming Hutchinson, Minnesota, for whatever. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 1017 be laid over for possible inclusion. So that's thank you very much for coming, and appreciate your comments and the treats as well. Tell your mayor thank you. I don't know where he oh, okay. Representative Hansen. I'll move that House File 2303 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Hansen, welcome. Representative Claflin's sticking around, and we've got I don't know how we did this, but we're already about 10 minutes behind, so my apologies. But Representative Hansen, or however you want to proceed, go ahead, please.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 2303 is a bill for appropriating money to the Serbian Cultural Center in South St. Paul. And it would be, I'd encourage you to visit the Serbian Cultural Center. It's on the National Register of Historic Places, and it is full of a variety of artifacts that need some help, and the building needs a little bit of help. So I have with me Alex Stamenovich.
Stamenovich, yes.
And his son, who's helping out with showing the Serbian hall when it was dedicated. So we have a family affair here helping tonight talk a little bit about the Serbian Cultural Center.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Please state your name for the record. Maybe, I don't know if you need to spell it. Or.
Thank you, Chairman Lilly.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share this story about this hall. My name is Alex Stamenovich. It's very phonetic. It's easy to spell.
I believe we have the correct spelling, so yes. Thank you, sir.
This building, really, there are several aspects to this project. One of them is to bridge the gap with new immigrants that came in 1990s during Yugoslavian wars and show them what people did 100 years ago. Most of the immigrants that are here now from Yugoslavia don't know about Serbian Hall. The first wave of Serbs came in 1856, actually, Stearns County. And then by 1910, there were 6% of Slavic population in the United States lived in Minnesota. About 60 families lived in South St. Paul. And they worked at the meatpacking company. And this is them with their families. And they all pitched in. $4 each, one person put $100. Everyone says $4, $1. All of their names are there, and they built this hall for $1,500 in 1910. In 1924, in 1992, it became on a list of National Historic buildings, and we need funds to be able to repair the building. Specifically, structurally, we need to make sure that we have fire suppression. We need to make sure that the bricks are intact, there's also an issue with the heating of the building. So the second aspect of it, not just for the Serbian culture and Serbian immigrants that came here, but also as a building itself in South St. Paul, an empty 10,000 square foot building doesn't do any good, and that's for the city. We found people dumping items in the alley and graffiti and all kinds of things. So having that activity helps. It is in the middle of the city. The building itself will serve not only the Serbian population, American Serbian population here, and introduce our culture here. You know, for example, not many people know that Nikola Tesla was Serbian, right? But it will also serve the locally and abroad as a community center. Croatian Hall down the hall and Polish Hall have all become their restaurants, their restaurant bars. This is actually a museum. There's no liquor there. We want to make sure that we keep it as a museum. And it's very hard to find funds for a project like this. We will expand the role, so it also serves as a community center for everyone to use. Again, we need to make sure the building is safe in order for us to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Anything from your son? I'm impressed that you're here helping. Thank you very much. That's neat. Any questions from members? Representative Bo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question, but just a comment. One of my undergrad degrees is in electronics, and I'm glad to see Tesla having some tribute here because he's done so much for the world of electronics over the years. So that's nice to see.
Thank you, Representative Bo.
Thank you.
And the Representative Bo, if you visit the hall, we have quite a bit of literature inside the hall on Tesla.
Representative,
Mr. Chair, I have not yet, but I will. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we're about there. Representative Claflin, would you like to say anything on this?
Yes, thank you. I stayed up here because this is also in my district. It's actually around the corner from my house. And these halls used to be the cultural cornerstone for communities. We mentioned the Croatian mm-hmm. Hall in South St. Paul. The Serbian Hall had that same function. And I would love to see this building brought back to life and all of the artifacts that are inside it preserved. There's quite a treasure trove of historical artifacts within that building.
Thank you very much. Representative Hansen, any final comments?
Well, we're a short ways away, so a tour, if the committee is interested in visiting, that would be okay. We could. Thank you, committee members. This is a little gem that is just kind of hidden in a neighborhood in South St. Paul, and it needs a little care. And so Mr. Siminich has done a good job of trying to get the nonprofit back together to be doing the ownership and the workmanship there. And so we need a little help to make things work more. So they've done probably the last 2-3 years of trying to get things organized, and so we're asking for a little help, and anything you would be able to provide would be great.
Thank you very much for coming again. I very much am familiar with the area, and Representative Hansen had me come down for one of the last auctions, I think, that was held in the many of these folks probably worked at for years, and before they were shutting down some of the packing, and then I've been down in that community as well. But thank you very much for coming, and again, thank you for bringing your son. And with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 2303 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much, and thank you, Mayor, for coming in. Make sure you get the rest of the money from Representative Hansen. Representative Olson? So the chair, I'll move that House File 2157 be laid over for possible inclusion. So Representative Olson, we moved your bill, and it's before us. Welcome. Again, my apologies for, I don't know if you've been here all day, your testifier perhaps, and the rest of us signed up for this craziness, but some of the testifiers are a little surprised by it. But thank you very much for coming back this evening, and Representative Olson, please go ahead when you're ready.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So we'll try to just keep it short. House File 2157 is a $250,000 appropriation to the Lake Superior Zoo, or the Duluth Zoo, Lake Superior Zoo, Duluth Zoo, as we call it. And I would just like to share that it's one of a great asset to our community. It's one of our main tourist attractions in the western half of Duluth, which is my district. I personally am at the zoo a lot. We don't have a lot of attractions for families in Duluth in terms of, like, we have a lot of cold winter months, and there are a few places you can go to take a toddler to burn off some energy, and the zoo is definitely one of those places. And it's situated in a really great location that is having more investments too, so I think the zoo's best days are really ahead, and I think anything we can do in this area is particularly important. And in addition to zoo housing several exhibits, the main building is the entry point to the zoo, but it is well past its useful life. Much like how Duluth acts as a gateway to the North Shore and wilderness experiences, that's really the main idea of what this building is the front door to the new zoo. With the enhanced exhibit space, it's critical to the zoo's mission of giving residents and visitors to our great city a connection to Minnesota's great outdoors. And so with that, I will turn it over to my testifier for more details on the project.
Thank you, and go ahead. Welcome to our committee. Please state your name.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to address this evening. I said this afternoon, but it's evening. I know you had a really long day, and so I won't take much of your time. My name is Lynn Habiger, and I'm the Director of Business Operations at the Lake Superior Zoo. The Lake Superior Zoo is an AZA-accredited zoo. It is the only AZA-accredited zoo in greater Minnesota, with a long history of providing close-up animal experiences and educational opportunities that inspire connections to wildlife and action towards conservation, not only in our region, but around the world. Established in 1923 with a lone white-tailed deer, the Lake Superior Zoo is now home to over 300 animals. More than 90 of those animals are housed and cared for in the zoo's main building. The oldest structure on the premises completed in 1929. The zoo's main building is currently and literally falling apart. It does not meet the educational or habitat space needs of a modern zoo facility, and it is the first impression of visitors and constituents of our zoo. It has exceeded its useful life. Replacement of this facility will provide us the opportunity to expand our nature and conservation-based educational mission and develop public spaces to facilitate expanded interactive animal habitats, which will drastically improve indoor programming opportunities. It will also serve some very basic yet significant needs for improved accessibility and access. The replacement of this building is part of our long-term revitalization plan to maintain the zoo as a viable community and regional asset. We are currently seeking legacy funding in the amount of $250,000 to enter into the pre-plan design and design development and final planning and budgeting for the replacement of this building. The replacement of this building is necessary. This project will aid us in preserving the historical significance that the zoo has in our area and will perpetuate the cultural heritage of the region in providing residents and visitors access to and education about native species, Minnesota's natural environment, its natural heritage, and wildlife conservation. The Lake Superior Zoo is grateful for prior legacy appropriations that have contributed to these efforts in the past, including plan and design funds for our Bear Country exhibit that is opening this year, and most recently, our overwhelmingly popular native butterfly exhibit and this spring's upcoming Amphibians of Minnesota exhibit, which, by the way, will be housed in our main building. I'd like to thank you for your valuable time. We would not be able to offer our region many of these educational opportunities without your support.
Thank you very much. Any questions from members? I don't. Yes. So, Representative Olson, thank you. I've been up to your zoo. It's beautiful. It's kind of tucked in the side of the hill there, I believe, right? And but it's actually quite amazing and intimate, which I really like it. Many of us had an opportunity to, who's next is the Minnesota Zoo, but through my life we've been able to spend a lot of time at Como Zoo, so I'm kind of I know Representative Hausman's been a champion for that for years, but I'm glad you're championing this. It's a good effort that you're doing up there, and but thank you very much for coming today, and sorry again for your waiting.
Not a problem. Thank
any
you.
Any final comments, Representative Olson?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. With that, thank you very much. I'll renew my motion that House File 2157 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Again, my apologies for waiting.
Please.
Okay. So, Representative Hewitt, welcome. We've had an opportunity to hear from you folks, and we had a great visit. So I think you can probably help us with our agenda, which catch us up a little maybe. So, Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, and thank you for hearing our legacy bill tonight, Bill 2510.
Oh, with sorry, that, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I actually should move it. Representative Hewitt, members, I'll move that House File 2510 be laid over for possible inclusion. So with that, Representative Hewitt, I'm sorry, we have your bill before us.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. Funds from the arts and cultural heritage have always been an important component of the legislator's support for the Minnesota Zoo since the legacy amendment was passed. As a large cultural institute, the zoo uses these funds to expand its programming and conservation work around the state. I have with me today the zoo's legislative liaison, Claudia Hockenstein. Did I say it right? Okay. Who will tell you more about some of the ways that the support from the Art and Cultural Heritage Fund helped the zoo reach more Minnesotans and provide an elevated zoo experience.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Welcome. Nice to have you back. Please say your name for the record and go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Claudia Hockstein. I'm the legislative liaison at the Minnesota Zoo. I'm obviously not Zoo Director John Frawley, and he apologizes that he's not able to make it this evening. I'd like to thank also Representative Hewitt for offering the bill. The Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund provides an important piece of funding for the Minnesota Zoo, the State Zoo of Minnesota, and an AZA-accredited zoo that's a public-private partnership welcoming 1.3 million yearly visitors. You heard from our staff earlier in the session and our animal ambassadors. You heard about how the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund has helped us extend the reach of the Minnesota Zoo to connect people, animals, and the natural world to save wildlife. Representative Hewitt's bill provides the same level of arts and cultural heritage money that the zoo has received since the fiscal year 2014 biennium, and that's $3.5 million over the biennium. With your support, we can continue to use legacy dollars to provide expanded services in four areas: conservation education, including connecting more guests with wildlife through close encounters experiences and the Wings Financial World of Birds show. We also have outreach, access, and new audiences. For example, legacy funding has helped our Zoo Mobile deliver more programming and bring the zoo to more Minnesotans around the state every year. The third category is Minnesota's natural heritage, which has helped our field conservation staff begin important conservation projects aimed at preserving unique Minnesota species and landscapes. Finally, the fourth category is preserving Minnesota's farm heritage. Legacy money allows the Wells Fargo Family Farm at the zoo to remain open for over three additional months every season to continue connecting Minnesotans to a working farm. Your packets include our legacy fact sheet and the fiscal year 2018 Minnesota Zoo Legacy Report, which provides more details about any of these programs. So thank you, Representative Hewitt. Thank you, Representative Lilly, and members. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer anything you might have.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Representative Hewitt? Seeing none, Representative Hewitt, go ahead and any final comments, sir?
Members, thank you for hearing the bill tonight. I've seen many of you that came out and visited our zoo, and I look forward to your hopeful consideration to hold this over for possible inclusion. Have a good night.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Again, thank you to the Minnesota Zoo for hosting opportunity to visit. Many of us were able to be there, and you were able to tell about some of the programs that you're doing, like them, and doing good work with the legacy dollars. So thank you for that.
Thank you, and we're always happy to have legislators come see what we're doing down there.
Thank you. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 2510 be laid over for possible inclusion. So let's. Should we just go right? So just to let everybody know, we're through the morning, so we're just going to jump, let Representative Laban kind of jump ahead because she has folks that are from Grand Rapids, I believe, and they might want to hit the road before it's sunlight in the morning. But so with that, I'll move that House File 1443 is laid over for possible inclusion. So with that, Representative Laban. We have your bill before us.
Okay.
Please go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you, Chair Lilly, and I so much appreciate your accommodating us. You accommodated us in two ways. One is you allowed us to come tonight when your other museum requests are coming on Friday. So thank you for that, and thank you for moving us up in respect for my visitors from Grand Rapids. Well, with me here at the table is Mr. Ray Nichols. He's chairman of the board of the Children's Museum. And Mr. John Kelsch, who's the executive director of the Children's Museum. The Children's Discovery Museum is located in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And that Grand Rapids, Minnesota is a population of about 11,000 people. But it's the only children's museum in northern Minnesota, I believe, other than Duluth. And so it draws from quite a radius. And it's turned out to be a really popular spot Representative Olson was just talking about the winter time and places for families and children. Well, this is it in Grand Rapids. So I am pleased to bring Bill 14, House File 1443 for you for consideration for layover. And with that, I'd like to turn over the testimony. Mr. Nichols is going to be doing most of the testimony, and John Kelch is here to fill in any blanks that we might have.
Thank you, Representative Lehman. And Mr. Nichols, please state your name for the record, even though I just said it, but please state your name for the record.
Ray Nichol, and I'm the chairman of the board at the Children's Discovery Museum. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, and members tonight for your time. I'd also like to quick thank you for the past 8 years of helping us out through the legacy funds. This has been a long and very productive relationship and continues to grow each year. This past year, we had over 4,000 children in the form of field trips attend the Children's Discovery Museum. And what we, you know, we basically bring kids out of the classroom and into the world of discovery. And I'm sure all the committee members probably remember a field trip. At one time during school, we primarily had kids of preschool to third grade. And we bring them in from all over northern Minnesota, from cities like Ball Club and Esko and Keewatin, LaPorte, Little Fork, Net Lake, on and on and on. Squaw Lake, some towns some of us maybe haven't recognized for a while. And these kids do not have the same, or I should say the teachers of these classrooms don't have the same resources as the folks and the teachers do in the metro area. There's not a place, a great place, other than a ski hill or something like that, to take a child on a field trip. So these teachers in these schools just continue to call each other and continue to bring these children in from all over northern Minnesota to attend our museum and a field trip for the day. So we're doing a neat thing there. You've got a handout here, and in that, all the different colors, to be brief, there's 16 different curriculums for the school teachers to choose from prior to coming in. And so we try to have something for everybody, and the teacher chooses, and then they bring in. A couple of our favorites the past year is we've added an anti-bullying curriculum that has been very popular and we think is very important because these kids are of all interests. They're the entire classroom. They're the baseball kids, the hockey kids, the dance kids. They're all there together for the day. And so we think it's a great opportunity for us to talk about that as well. As you can see, we have large numbers coming in. Again, over 4,000 students last year. They come from all over. And, you know, we go to the end of the school year. We start at the beginning of the school year, and the buses are coming in constantly all day long. So, again, 16 different things. Our team is made up also primarily of retired school teachers that have come into the museum and said, what can we do to help? So we have Grand Rapids school teachers and Deer River, different ones there that come in, volunteer during the day to facilitate these field trips. And so that's what our team is made up of. And we just could not do this without you folks. And like I said, in northern Minnesota, we really look at it as an outreach and a place to bring kids in. As you know, kids are 20% of the population and 100% of the future. And we provide a special place, a safe place for them to come. And like I said, I've got dozens of testimonials I could give you. We don't have time for that tonight. If you'd like any of those, please let me know from teachers and all around the northern Minnesota that are excited about what we're doing there. So, again, thank you so much for your past. We use these funds to bring in these kids and pay for the busing, pay for scholarships. Part of it goes to do new exhibits. We're looking at things that are more technology-driven. However, we want to stay really hands-on. That's one of our neatest that the teachers like the best because it's a really hands-on programming. So if you'd like any of those testimonials or any of that type of thing, please let us know and we'll sure get you more information.
With that, Mr. Chair, we're open for questions.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Nichols. Where is it?
Oh. Mr. Nichols.
Yes, Representative Lehman, we have some questions from members. Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier. Now, I've been to the Judy Garland Museum up there before you got the slippers back. Although I might say that last week I did see Representative Lehman walking around in some ruby slippers. But what
we'll
is the...
We'll catch her.
The Children's Museum and the Judy Garland Museum, are they connected? Or
Two separate buildings. The Children's Discovery Museum is the... Mr. Chair, the
yes, sir.
Children's Discovery Museum and the Judy Garland Museum are two separate entities, actually two separate buildings. The Judy Garland is the house.
Okay.
Which, by the way, actually some teachers do choose to use that as part of the field trip because it's a house that was built in the 20s. It's all authentic. Everything's original. And so there's really no mention of Judy Garland other than here's a house from the 1920s. And so sometimes that house is used as part of the field trip. But typically that part of the facility is actually a completely separate building from the Children's Museum.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. But as I recall, in the other building, not the house, I mean, I've been in the house too.
Right.
But isn't there a Judy Garland display?
That's a separate wing. Mr. Chair, that's a separate wing from the Discovery Museum part.
Representative
Erdahl.
Is it connected to it? I'm sorry, I don't remember.
It's connected to it, yeah.
That's all I wanted.
There's a doorway going into it.
Yep. So any other questions? Thank you very much. Now he has me, Representative Erdahl has me curious. Will you get the slippers back? They're found, supposedly. I guess I'm not really sure we know what's exactly
We don't
going
know
on.
Any more than you do,
I'm
Mr.
very
Chair.
Confused by the news story because it right. says they've been found, but I don't know. Anyways, Representative Lehman, thank you very much. And I love what you have going on in Grand Rapids. As a legislator, I've had a couple opportunities to come through your committee and or your community, rather. And you're really quite a little cultural hub. I believe people come from all over for your orchestra and things that you have going on in your the theater tied to the school. And I'm certain that you're good stewards of this as well. So, Representative Lehman, final comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you're acknowledging what I have witnessed and the legacy fund has had an impact in Grand Rapids. We're sort of a cultural hub and arts hub, and the legacy impact has really enhanced that. So thank you so much for hearing us tonight, and thank you for your support.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming, and Representative Lehman, thank you for coming and...
Will you renew your motion?
I'm going to.
Okay.
I renew my motion that House File 1443 be laid over for possible inclusion. And so that's laid over. And thank you again, Representative Lehman and your guests. With that, I'd like to move that Representative Kudish Pudin. As the chair, I'll move that House File 1348. Be laid over for possible inclusion, and welcome to the Legacy Committee, Representative, and I'll give you a few seconds here for your guests to get positioned. And So your bill has been moved, so it's before us. And Representative Kudish Pudin, please go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you. Are we addressing 1347 or 1348?
We started with House File 1348.
All right. So 1348, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. 1348 is... Let me get my papers in order here. is a bill that is going to provide appropriations for an American Indian Legacy Grant Program, specifically for the Native American art communities, not limited to dance or beadwork or that sort of thing, but a broad spectrum of the arts. Members, I just want to remind you that for centuries, American Indian artistic and cultural practices have been passed down from one generation to the next, like many of our own cultures. But this process experienced disruptions when American Indians were pressured to assimilate to other cultures and when they were removed from their traditional homelands to reservations. And I probably don't have to remind you, but this is Dakota land originally, and we scooted over and made room for the Anishinaabe Ojibwe as we moved more to the west, but this is Indian land. So the American Indians were pressured to assimilate. They were removed from their traditional homelands to reservations. And then around that time, I would say within the last couple of decades, and maybe the most recent two decades, many museums and cultural organizations like the Minnesota Historical Society started to grow their collection of American Indian artwork. And we appreciate that Minnesota has acknowledged this role in the disruption and is working to become a resource for our American Indian communities. And we believe that the museums can assist the artists in connecting with work created by the ancestors and a current unique interpretation of their own arts. And we're hoping that you can provide the support for more learning and practice and teaching. It's really critical that Minnesota support the recovery of the cultural art forms, such as theater, dance, language, handwork, music, etc., that are endangered of being lost altogether. And we have a very thriving, dynamic, indigenous American Indian community that perform, that create, that share their skills and their knowledge. And what we're asking here is for the legacy grant, for the legacy committee to carve out a part of the appropriations specifically for Native American artists, and not including in any big presentations or exhibits where they might exhibit one or two or three pieces of art and call that their contribution to Native American art, but specific grants to specific artists, because as some of the information that we've been able to collect has shown that the American Indian and Alaska Natives have been receiving perhaps 1.3% of grants that have been allocated. And with white, non-Hispanic, or Latino at 80.6%, black African Americans at 6.2%, Hispanic Latino at 5.2%, Asian at 4.9%, American Indian, Alaska Natives at 1.3%. And so we're kind of, once again, at the bottom of the barrel. And we're asking to be moved up and given the opportunity to expand the culture and the historic presence here in Minnesota. So with that, I would like to invite, I have a couple of testifiers here that would like to speak to this issue. And I will, would you like to start first?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Representative Kudush-Budin, for your opening. And please go ahead and state your name and welcome to our committee, and thank you for waiting and coming back while you were, I guess, scheduled for this evening. So yes. Please go ahead when you're ready.
Okay, I would like to start my introduction in my language, which is Dakota.
Yep. Please start by saying your name, though, first.
It's Crystal Norcross.
Okay, thank you.
Hamatakyapi, Shukmani Tumwawe Hemachyapi, Tamakotahe. Crystal Norcross and Machapi, Sitsin Wapton, Himataha, Imnizuska, Edwati. So my name is Crystal Norcross. I am Dakota from Sitsin Wapton, Oyate, but you know, I live here in St. Paul, which we call Imnizuska, which means the White Cliffs, referring to the mounds. But so, Chair and Committee,
I am the board chair of Oyate Hotenin, which means the voice of the people. I've been involved with Native arts and heritage most of my life, going on 30 years. I'm a hoop dancer, spoken word artist, and a traditional sewer and storyteller. Today I come to the committee because Native arts and heritage seem to be lacking in our modern society. I recently had the opportunity to meet a government official from Canada and was moved to learn the large budgets that Canada makes available for its Aboriginal people. It brings me to the point of wondering, why don't we have the same commitment here? This all stems from the Walker's scaffold, which really shed light on the absence of American Indian peoples and arts. This impact made a lot of Indian people relive trauma. I remember getting my first call about the Dakota 38 scaffold. When it had appeared on Walker grounds, it was highly visible to passing by traffic on 94. I was in hospitals in the last days of my high-risk pregnancy, which required me to be in bed rest. Instead, I knew I had to see it, so I went over there. When I got there, I was shocked and angered. Who would allow this? We knew that this was the reaction that the artist wanted. But he didn't think about us, about my people, the Dakota Oyate. It's sad to say many Dakota people never healed from these traumas. Next, we as Dakota people and Native artists knew that the impact in the community was significant, even alarming, and that the amount of trauma had to be addressed. We started a series of conversations in the community that was the place that brought forward this bill. That's where it was born, its conception. The incident revealed two issues. One, American Indian people lack adequate resources and visibility in our own homeland to tell our own stories and protect our heritage. Two, Native stories and images are unique in their ability to make large amounts of money for other people. We are seeking an American Indian Legacy Grant program so that the invisible can become visible. The grant program would provide participation by the American Indian community in several ways. One, more American Indian artists will participate through a specific amount of money committed to American Indian arts in all of its forms. Second, the American Indian community will select projects to be funded, which will combat the cultural appropriation of our images, stories, and intellectual properties. And thirdly, the selection of American Indian projects will promote a vibrant, honest American Indian worldview, the first and foundational Minnesota legacy. So I want to thank you so much for your time. I just want to leave one little blip. I just want you to remember that American Indian peoples are not just a race, but a political status. Please keep that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for sharing your voice as well. It was neat to hear your language.
Thank you. Language. My English name is Rory Earler. Wake him up. Thank you for hearing us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Language. EchoHawk Consulting recently completed a $3 million national study called Reclaiming Native Truth. The findings in this study confirmed what most Native people already know but had no data to back it up. Three findings can sum up what I want to get across in this hearing. Invisibility is the modern form of bias against Native Americans. Two, the majority of Americans know a little to nothing about Native Americans. Three, on the one of the good points from the study is that 78% of Americans are interested in learning about Native cultures, and that strong majorities support Native positions on most issues. Ignorance is a barrier. As an artist, my biggest barrier has been that non-Native folks that know nothing about my culture are the gatekeepers of opportunity for me and other Native artists. We often have to sacrifice our desired aesthetic and art concepts to appease the ignorance of these gatekeepers. This cycle perpetuates stereotypes. In the museum world, we call this ignorant lens the museum effect. It stems from a long history of myths and stereotypes about us created by ignorance and racism. Ideologically corrupt was a term used by museums to call our art, crafts, and contemporary culture inauthentic. Through the history of museums and non-native perspectives, has solidified an aesthetic that does not belong to contemporary native peoples. Fine arts galleries and crafts art markets are much the same, but that aesthetic was built on the European gaze. The European gaze is even worse than the museum effect because it's built on racist stereotypes of Hollywood and pop culture. Even in philanthropy and public arts funding, we run into these barriers of stereotypes and ignorance. Even though these institutions tend to have more people of color on staff and in their selection committees, they still share that lens of ignorance. We are still here. That's the movement stemming from the Reclaiming Native Truth study. It's a movement that is emerging right now and is going to be the movement of our generation. Our goal is to use data from the Reclaiming Native Truth study to reclaim our narrative in pop culture, K-12 education, government, and philanthropy. Self-determination. These public funds will not only allow us to select and create our own arts, but will help us educate the 78% of Americans interested in learning about Native cultures and who we are from our authentic perspective. It is time for us to have the privilege to determine for ourselves what our arts is to become and what artists we want to represent our arts and culture into the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. You have Representative Kudish-Bedin. You have one more testifier. Yep, that's all right. Hi, please state your name for the record and go ahead when you're ready, please.
I'll be quick. My name is Sharon Gay.
Tell your story.
I'm an Ojibwe, born and raised in Minnesota. Been here all my life, seen many things. I'm the executive director of the Indigenous Peoples Task Force. And when I went to this agency and was the founder, there was an AIDS epidemic. And the only way we could get our message across to young people was to tell them the stories. And so we brought in Spider-Woman Theater from New York City. They're 40 years in the acting business. They came, they taught us how to do theater. This theater, Iquitoan Youth Theater, is the oldest theater in the country next to Spider-Woman Theater. And we have done it with zero, I won't say zero. In 30 years, we've received $50,000 out of legacy funds. We wouldn't survive if it weren't for the health department, if it weren't for even the Centers for Disease has funded our work. And, our youth have crisscrossed the state many times. In fact, we were just in Grand Rapids last year at the Rife Center. We were at the Duluth Aquarium last Sunday. And these youth come to our program after school, and this is where they spend their time learning the craft of acting. They do the research to put the stories together, and they deserve to have their voices heard. Our community is rich in arts. It always has been. In fact, there isn't even a word for art in many native languages. It's part of what we do. And yet, like I said, in 30 years, this theater program that has been at the Guthrie, been at the Ordway, has received just a tiny, tiny bit of money from the arts community. And we all know that that the majority of the arts money in the state of Minnesota goes to five art organizations, and we are not one of them. And we're talking about the Guthrie, the Ordway, Children's Theater, the Walker Art Center. And the Walker Art Center irritates me a little bit because they received $10 million to redo the sculpture garden. because they screwed up when they built it on the wetlands in the first place. And that money and a million of it came from the Mississippi River watershed. So I just wanted to make sure that you are paying attention. And I urge you to support this because it's the right thing to do.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And members, I don't know if you had an opportunity to – I happened to have a few minutes last evening, and in our packets is this article basically on the scaffolding, and it was written by former Representative Susan Allen. And it's a little bit long, but it's definitely worth reading, and I learned a lot of different things in there, and some of the – concerns and comments were mentioned earlier in the discussion, and it kind of helped me understand some of the concern and feelings, if you will, or thoughts. Representative Kudish Padin, any comments? Any questions from members?
Could I just have one more minute?
Yes, please do.
You know, I didn't even look at what I wrote, but. I got a little fired up there. But I just wanted to say that, tell you just one last little success story. And that was a young woman named Janet Sanchez. She is a senior now, and she came to us about 7 years ago. Today she gets straight A's in school. She's an actor, a wrestler. She's the only one of the few Native kids performing in intramurals in high school. And she's a mentor in the police PALS program. But she wasn't always a straight-A student, and she didn't always do well in school. But over the past 7 years, because of coming to our program and continuing to work and continuing to get support, today she's a thriving young woman who wants to be a police officer. And this past summer, their house caught on fire, and people in our community, we were able to raise $5,000 for their family to get back on their feet. And this is the kind of thing that we do for each other. But at the same time, you know, when we see all around us such abundance, and when our kids went to Carlisle to the National Boarding School Conference to perform, you know, we had to raise $5,000 for them to get there. And while we've been funded by the health department, eliminating health disparities, that money has gotten smaller every year. And they have barriers. They don't allow you to give anybody a stipend over $50 in a year. And our youth who are actors, and you know, they should be paid for their art just like every other actor is. And so we have to raise about $20,000 from little bits and pieces here and there to be able to pay them. And this is how all of our art programs are. And, you know, I worked with that architect some years ago. His name was Douglas Cardinal. And he said that out of the dance of chaos comes creativity. And our young people are in that dance with chaos every day. You know what the statistics are. This art is a way out. Thank you.
Thank you for the additional comments are appreciated. Representative Zhang has
a
question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mary Kunis, for bringing this bill forward. I also want to thank my neighbor and my fellow Eastsider, Crystal. I remember a couple of weeks ago, she kept on Facebook messaging me, "Hey, can you tell Leon Lilly to hear this bill?" And so when I found out what she was trying to get my attention to, I really appreciate you all championing this issue, and know that I fully support this. Representative Kunis Padin,
thank you,
and Crystal.
Thank you, Representative Zhang. And in full disclosure, he was adamant and immediately sent me an email, and certainly Representative Kunis Padin's been diligent as well. Any further questions? Any final thoughts, Representative Kunis Padin?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill is requesting $5 million over the next couple of years over the biennium, and it will be appropriated from the Arts and Cultural Heritage to fund all these varieties of Native American and Indigenous arts that we've been talking about. The Minnesota Humanities Center has agreed wholeheartedly to facilitate these grants, and the grants will go directly to the artists, decided by the artists, a group that will decide specifically who that will go. And they're going to be looking at it through their lens, not from our lens, but from their lens. And while we all appreciate the generosity and the value of monies that have come through this committee, we just would like to, at this time, extend that request. I don't know that anybody's ever sat in front of you and asked for this kind of a grant that goes specifically directly to our Indigenous people, but I think it's time to do that. I think we're going to find some really incredible things that will come out of it, and I think Minnesota will thank you, and I know our communities will as well, so thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative, and thank you all of you for coming and speaking on this important topic. With that, I'll move that House File 1348 be laid over for possible inclusion. So,
thank you, Chair.
Stick around.
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere.
Okay. Representative Kudush-Gudin also has House File 1347. I'll move that House File 1347 be laid over for possible inclusion. I understand we have an amendment, and I'll move the amendment. Does everybody kind of have an opportunity to look at the amendment that's in our packet? So I'll move the amendment, and all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment prevails. So we have House File 1347 as amended before us. Representative, please go ahead.
Wonderful. So this bill is basically renewing the original amendment creating the legacy heritage funds. In 2008, Minnesota voters passed a constitutional amendment creating a new 38-cent sales tax to support outdoor heritage, clean waters, sustainable drinking water, parks and trails, arts, history, and cultural heritage projects and activities, and thus this committee was created. So of the total proceeds from the sales tax, 19.75 are dedicated to the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund to support arts education, arts access, and to preserve Minnesota's history and cultural heritage. And based on the current sales tax revenue, the people of Minnesota will have invested more than $1.2 billion in the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund program, which I think is really commendable. And the project was to be over a 25-year life of the tax. And then so it was broken down into two different areas. There was a 25-year vision, and that was tasked to transform the state, providing every Minnesotan lifelong access to programs and activities that engage him or her as an innovator, historian, entrepreneur, and creator of Minnesota's future. It was to enable every Minnesotan to have a voice and be able to see the arts, history, and cultural heritage programs that will lead to a new Minnesota, grown businesses that thrive in the state and invest in the creativity of its entire people. And second to the last, it allows for artists. And I think it's really important to recognize the artists to express his or her personal heritage in Minnesota arts, history, and cultural heritage works. And then to invest these funds to bolster Minnesota's reputation as a center for creativity, innovation, imagination, and, of course, contribute to the long-term vitality of our state. The second one is the 10-year plan, and that was tasked to review goals and measurable outcomes. It required the ACHF to use a defined set of measurable goals that can be evaluated periodically to ensure programs are on track and that they are effective. And then Lastly, they were to report to the legislature and evaluate their 10-year goals and outcomes on a biennial basis. So this bill appropriates $20,000 in fiscal year 2020 to update the 25-year-old plan and create a second 10-year plan for Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Any discussion? Wow. Representative Bo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick question. I noticed that the author's amendment went from 20,000 to 90,000. So I wanted to, A, let you know that, or
yes.
Remind you.
No, I do remember that.
And B, just to check and see, I mean, that's a fairly substantial increase. So what caused that? Was it just fine-tuning the dollars and seeing what you would need to accomplish the things? Or
so when we...
Pardon
me, Chair. Representative, when the bill was originally written, we were using the numbers from when it was originally created, this task force or this plan, and we got back a suggestion that the efforts with not only the timelines would be frustrating and disengage people, but the funding in today's dollars is very different than the funding back in 2008, and so that's why that's a little bit different.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Representative Bo.
Yep.
Good answer.
Yep.
Okay. Any other questions for the author? Representative Wazalek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kunesh-Pudin, I don't know if you know this, but I'm just wondering if you or maybe the nonpartisan staff have information on when they first did this planning part. I'm just curious to know where those initial funds to do this planning came from.
Ms. Mullen.
Chair and members, I was not here then, but from what I have pieced together, and Helen might be able to fill this in a little too, each of the funds contributed a small portion towards putting together the plan. And then I believe the funding went, a small portion of the funding went to the Historical Society to help facilitate it, but I might be wrong on that. But there were small pieces of funding built into the bill.
Representative Wazalek.
That's pretty much all I wanted to know. I just wanted to be clear about kind of what the past, the history of this was. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other further discussion? Seeing none, thank you, Representative Kudush-Pudin. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 1347, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Committee. We appreciate it.
Thank you, and you might. We have some out-of-town people, so... Representative Hausman, I don't know if you'd be willing to, I didn't warn you, I'm sorry, but I believe you have some people from the Moorhead area that might need to get back home this evening and some.
And Mr. Chair, I'll just move the bill from here because if all the testifiers are there, they can perhaps more quickly transition from one to another.
Okay. So do you want me to move it or do you want to? You're on the committee, so.
Sure. I would move House File 543 for possible inclusion.
Thank you. So we have the bill before us, and welcome. Welcome to our committee. Nice to see you again, sir. Welcome, and please go ahead. Well, Representative Hausman, I'm sorry.
Sure, I'll make just a little bit of introductory comment, and then the three will educate you. And we're grateful that you're hearing this. It's, this House file is based on a proposal that was funded by the Legacy Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund for the past two funding cycles. It has created opportunities for awareness and education and responded to necessary dialogue between Somalis and the communities they live in, where tension and misunderstanding has been growing. Over the past 4 years, there has been some success in communities like St. Cloud, Rochester, Wilmer, and the Twin Cities. Ongoing challenges remain in these communities and beyond in Faribault and Moorhead. As you'll hear in a moment, the work that was created was quite impressive and has helped to create new opportunities in several areas in our state. But the fact is that there are still a number of cultural challenges within and between the Somali and non-Somali communities around the state, and that is why these efforts brought forward by these courageous men and women should be applauded and continued. The only way we can help resolve these problems and make our communities stronger and more vibrant is by continuing to work in partnership as leaders of our state alongside leaders of the Somali community, and we will hear from three of them tonight.
Thank you, Representative Hausman, and thank you very much for coming tonight and sticking around.
And Mr. Chair, they are from the Twin Cities, St. Cloud, and Moorhead.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome. I don't know how you want to proceed, but go ahead. Please state with your name for the record, and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good evening. My name is Mohammed Farah. I am the executive director of KJOG. KJOG is a Somali youth development organization tailored towards enriching the lives of Somali American youth by utilizing the positive elements of education, mentoring, employment, and the arts and the humanities. On behalf of Somali Minnesota youth and all Minnesotans, I urge you to support House File 543. Established in 2007 by a group of Somali young people in the Twin Cities, KJOG focuses its effort on encouraging Somali youth from negative influences such as drugs, violence, and other behaviors that are detrimental to their development and future. Instead, we direct young people to higher education, civic involvement, and volunteer commitment to their community. Building trust and relationships within the community is a key part of our work. This is done through our FUNCA program. FUNCA means the arts in Somali. But we also infuse arts with humanities as a way to teach young people about their culture and heritage, as a way to build connections, trust, and relationship between the East African community and the non-Somali communities here in Minnesota. However, providing opportunities for intercultural dialogues is a key factor of our program. Using spoken word, storytelling, visual arts, documentaries are just examples of the ways that we help provide opportunities for intercultural dialogue. Looking at our handout right before you today, there are many successful examples that have taken place in the Twin Cities and Greater Minnesota, especially the play called The Chronicles of the Diaspora, which was the first play written in English that we know of today. The play highlighted the experience of two Somali-American immigrants, families, and examines their version of the American dream. Many forces play into this story for these families: identity crisis, anti-immigrant sentiments, the strains of preserving culture, mental health, suicide, domestic abuse, topics that many consider taboo in the East African community, and highlights the misunderstandings and the tensions between the longtime Americans and the new Somali neighbors. Promises of prosperity and happiness are felt that reach far beyond the limbo of living in two cultures. The play was shown in different cities, such as Minneapolis and St. Cloud. For example, we had both Somali and non-Somali actors within the play. The focus and the storyline changed based on the location where the play was being showcased to reflect the issues that are taking place in that particular community. So the play in Minneapolis was very much different than the play in St. Cloud, for example. After the play, we would have a discussion as a community and talk about ways that we can tackle these issues as residents of St. Cloud, as residents of St. Paul or Minneapolis, and, or what, just as an example. We always made sure that we had elected officials, community folks, both Somalis and non-Somalis, both private and public, as part of the audiences in order to have a robust community-led discussions and also solutions about some of these issues that these communities are facing. Mr. Chair and committee members, we have a lot of work ahead of us, especially in Greater Minnesota. We don't have many opportunities for intercultural dialogues in many places throughout Minnesota. When we don't have these opportunities, we see fear we see the lack of dialogue and the lack of education. Because of this, people do get hurt mentally and physically, as sad as that sounds. And we have seen this play out in many ways right before our eyes, locally and in greater Minnesota. You have the power to change this course moving forward, and I hope you can support this particular bill right before you. We are living in a very critical time and moment, and we need your leadership and advocacy for these issues. I would like to thank Representative Hausman for her leadership and for your advocacy for our community and for the communities across Minnesota, and for this bill. Mr. Chair and committee members, again, with your support, we can do some amazing work throughout Minnesota, and I hope you can consider supporting this bill with your heavy heart. Thank you for your time and your support. And now I would like to introduce Haji Yusuf from the St. Cloud area.
Mr. Farah, before we move on, I just want to say I was up at the recently at the History Center, and I believe you're famous. Your picture's up there in the Somali exhibit, I believe, and you look good. Representative Omar, former representative, now U.S. representative, and then is up there on the, they have a Somali exhibit, and it's pretty neat exhibit. If you get a chance, members and others, to get up there and see it, it's a good exhibit, but it's some good effort that's helping connect your community with ours and vice versa, and it's very hectic. Sorry, I interrupted, but please state your name, and thank you for coming down to St. Paul.
My name is Haji Yusuf with Minimo from St. Cloud, Minimo, USA. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, everyone who's here. Actually, I'm also in that museum. I don't know if you saw my face.
Yeah, okay, I'll take a note.
Very, very prominent there too as well. First of all, I would like us to pay a moment to the victims of a shooting that has recently happened in a mosque in New Zealand, where around 50 people, children included, lost their lives. As we're living in a world where places of worship, synagogue, churches, are no longer sanctuaries anymore, and we need to pay attention to that. That's very important that I had to say that for all of us. This has happened in our country here in the U.S., and now it's being translated everywhere in many places across the world. So I want to talk about this in where I live in St. Cloud. As Minimo USA is part in front and creating and building conversation among many different communities that call Central Minnesota home. And Somalis are one of the groups that live in our area. And previously we have benefited from funding like this, where we had a play and also where local youth in St. Cloud benefited, being part and process of that, and also being hosted as part of this benefits, being hosted by St. Cloud State University and many other organizations across St. Cloud, hosting events, hosting our conversation from the benefit of previous bills that you as legislators have been able to afford groups like Kajog and many other ones. So we are very much in supportive of this, and we want to see more of that conversation happening in St. Cloud. And more than anything, this is beneficial, especially when we have high school students and college-going students benefiting and understanding cultures that are new to Central Minnesota. There's been pretty much a lot of tension, and we, working with this organization, have been at the forefront trying to unravel and reduce the tensions, and maybe we can create a conversation that we can move Central Minnesota forward. I've lived in Central Minnesota for 13 years. It's very important to me that Central Minnesota is part of a conversation of Greater Minnesota and also the state of Minnesota. And for me, we can move that if we have communities like the Somali communities and many other minority groups across Minnesota, either culturally or whatever that needs to be done, to engage communities that have been here so that we can create a better and greater Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir, for your comments. Hi, welcome. Please state your name for the record and go ahead when you're ready, please.
I would like to start with hello to Mr. Chair members and the members of this committee. My name is Farhia, and I am a case manager at Afro-American Development Association. I drove from Moorhead, Minnesota this afternoon, and it's a privilege and honor to be here. So we have a office. Our main office is based in Moorhead, and we're the only Somali community that's there. I work with a variety of different new Americans and with different backgrounds, and oftentimes I do, they share a lot of stories with me because we build that relationship, and the things that I hear are very hurtful, one being racism, Islamophobia, or anything else that's going on, and in my eyes, I do believe we do have a lack of we have a misunderstanding going on and a lack of education. So through arts and humanities, I believe that we could all be in common ground, and we're able to build that relationship between immigrants and the mainstream and the communities. And also oftentimes immigrants people are saying that immigrants are not fully integrating into the mainstream society, which is a false assumption. We are integrating fully, but the society isn't accepting us. And with this arts and humanities, I believe we'd be able to tackle all of the misunderstandings, and we'd all be able to, you know, have that common ground. And I do have several stories I could share, but it would take forever. So I'll just share maybe like one or two. I'm a Muslim woman that lives in America, and then oftentimes I run into several issues. People would see me and see how I speak. I speak very fluent, and the question that always comes up is, why are you still wearing a scarf, you know? So it's like, I don't know if I should get upset and offended, or if I should just, like, educate them, you know? So what I do is I basically tell them about my religion and that this is not old. You know what? I'm in the United States. I have to take it off. It's symbolic to my religion. And once they able to understand that, I don't think anyone, they would ever ask anyone else because they're already aware. So that's why I believe having this arts and humanities, we can just tackle all of that misunderstanding and just bond and have that relationship. And yeah, so I urge you to support the House File 543. And I would also like to take the time to thank Rep. Husband for the leadership that she is and for advocating for us. And thank you guys.
Thank you very much, and we'll have to get your picture up at the History Center as well. We have someone here to out in the crowd, so I'm sure that gentleman's heard what heard what we've said here. Representative Hausman, any additional comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill, and I think they told the story well, and thank you for being willing to travel distances to tell the story.
Thank you.
Any member questions? Seeing none, I also want to acknowledge that we're joined by Representative Houdon, and thank you very much for coming to our hearing here. And we heard some great testimony here, and so thank you. Representative Hausman, would you renew your motion that House File 543 be laid over for possible inclusion?
That's my motion, Mr. Chair.
So that's been moved, and that's your bill is laid over. Again, thank you. Safe travels, and
thank you.
Our
thank
sympathy you. To the and thoughts on the the recent.
Thank you.
Representative Erdahl, are you?
I'm ready.
Are you ready? Let's. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't believe he brought treats, so you'll have to represent Heisman.
We tried to tell him, Mr. Chair, that he could not present his bill from here. He had to go to the podium, but he wouldn't listen. He tried. But I'm glad you backed up our position.
Well, you let Representative Heisman.
Representative Erdahl moves that House File 1942 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. We have your bill before us, and welcome. And I know you were in multiple committees, so I'm glad you were able to circle back and join us. And Representative Erdahl, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
How could you miss that opportunity to be with your wonderful testifiers? You would have sat over here and missed the
well,
friendship.
I'm missing Chair Murphy, too. It's just, you know, it's a night of missing. But before we get, I would like to do a 30-second digression here because I got a phone call yesterday about another project, which, you know, we may have some written material for you at some point. But you recall last year we had $20,000 for the windmill in Grove City. They have raised $16,000. They just might need $4,000, which we can talk about later, to reconstruct the windmill.
So we're very close to our $30 million number then.
All right, moving right along.
Representative Erdahl.
Learning Law and Democracy has played a big role in helping civics education in the state of Minnesota. And as we all know and are all committed to, you know, improving the level of civics education in Minnesota, this is, I think, one part of that, and I have folks here from Learning Law and Democracy to testify to the importance of their mission to the youth of Minnesota regarding civics education. And so, who's first? I don't know.
Hi, welcome. Please state your name for the record and go ahead when you're ready.
Mr. Thank Chair, you. Members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this evening. My name is Joellen Ambrose, and I'm with Learning Law and Democracy Foundation. And we are together, the Minnesota Civic Education Coalition. I'd like to begin first with a discussion on civic cultural heritage. Whenever you are in a conversation with others from around the country discussing politics and civic involvement, they often say, and you have all heard of it, but you're from Minnesota. It's different there. Well, we are different, and it is a difference that is admired. Although Minnesota is home to many different cultures, evidenced by the diversity of programs supported through Legacy's Art and Cultural Heritage Fund, the one cultural heritage we all share is our less tangible civic cultural heritage. What are some characteristics of Minnesota's civic cultural heritage? We vote in large numbers, most of the time leading the nation in voter turnout. We cherish strong local problem-solving efforts. School boards, city councils, chambers of commerce, and neighborhood groups. We take the phrase, we the people, seriously. We have faith in our state government and get involved because we believe it matters. We value efficiency and want to spend our money carefully. We know that a healthy civic culture does not happen without significant effort and investment. The Minnesota Civic Education Coalition, as you can see in the programs in our brochure, is committed to providing a civic education that will preserve Minnesota's civic cultural heritage. I'd like to highlight two Learning Law and Democracy initiatives. First, the website, teachingcivics.org. Teachingcivics.org connects K-12 educators, both in schools and outside of school, with a searchable database of nearly 1,000 vetted, effective civics and government lessons. In the past 2 years, 3,000 users access lessons approximately 10,000 times, each time finding an average of 2.88 lessons. This means TeachingCivics.org has provided at least 100,000 young people with civics instruction. Through continued funding, we will increase lesson choices by adding 125 vetted searchable lessons and materials requested by teachers and community members. TeachingCivics.org would never have happened without the support of the legacy funds. A second initiative, research-based youth programs, involves more than 5,000 youth, many from high-risk communities, in civic education projects. One, Project Citizen, teaches young people how to solve community problems. In fact, many of you have seen Project Citizen student work displayed in the State Capitol Rotunda every May. Another program, We the People, the Citizen, and the Constitution, teaches young people about the Constitution and Bill of Rights. The winning team is invited to represent Minnesota in Washington, D.C. And now Super Civics, a brand new program for elementary students that teaches the basics, the building blocks of civic engagement, skills, and knowledge needed before students even enter high school. Super Civics teaches civil discourse through elementary respectful conversations, working with Minnesota civic youth.
Thank you for making all this possible. Without education funding, we cannot continue to support this important work.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Erdahl, you have some others that want to comment? Please introduce yourself and then, go ahead when you're ready, please.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for inviting us to testify tonight. My name is Amy Anderson. I'm also a member of the Civic Education Coalition, which includes Learning Law and Democracy, the YMCA's Youth in Government, and Minnesota Civic Youth, which coordinates the Kids Voting Program, among other key programs. When it comes to civic education, I was one of the lucky ones. I grew up with parents who were very civically minded and who talked to me about the theoretical and political and practical aspects of being a citizen, including its rights and responsibilities. I had teachers, like Representative Erdahl, who were very passionate about civic education and who encouraged me to learn about how our government works, along with the rules and practices we need to preserve our democracy. But not every child in this state is so lucky. In the past few decades, the focus of public education has turned sharply towards science, math, and literacy as we seek to help students develop employable skills. The fact is that students need both preparation to participate in the workforce and preparation to participate in civic society. I'm certain that many of you share my sense of pride that Minnesota consistently leads the nation in voter turnout. That accomplishment is not an accident. The fact is, our state has developed a strong civic culture around voting. Part of the way we do that is through programs like the Kids Voting Minnesota Network. This year, thanks to legacy funds, we coordinated nearly 200 polling sites for K-12 students on Election Day, including several high schools where we provided actual voting machines to make the process even more authentic. Why is it important to create opportunities for students to participate in the democratic process? Because study after study show that voting is habit forming. Once you vote, you're more likely to vote again and again and again. Another exciting effort we supported this year focused on student election judges. As elected officials, you are very familiar with the important role that election judges play in administering elections. The Student Election Judge Program serves multiple goals: increasing the number of election judges who are bilingual in targeted languages, addressing short and long-term election needs for effective technology-adept poll workers, increasing the ethnic and age diversity of our election judges to better reflect the faces of our community, helping high school students attain civic skills and dispositions, and providing high school students with increased connections to their community. I like to refer to this program as a triple win. Students like being election judges because they get paid and because they feel valued for their contributions. Election offices value the opportunity to expand and diversify their judge pool. And our democracy benefits because research shows that serving as an election judge inspires students to become active voters and members of their community. This fall, we worked with Ramsey, Hennepin, and Washington counties, as well as the cities of Minnetonka and St. Louis Park, to train and place more than 1,000 student election judges in the metro area. That is 1,000 young people who have had an insider's understanding of elections and voting, and a much higher likelihood of participating in future elections. We cannot take our well-known civic culture for granted. We need to invest in the next generation of civic leaders and change makers. Thank you for your time tonight and for making these programs possible through legacy funding.
Thank you very much. We might have a question now, or should we wait? Okay, thank you. Go ahead, sir. State your name for the record and see. Familiar face. We've seen you around the Capitol quite a bit. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Orville Lindquist. I'm the director of Minnesota YMCA Youth in Government, where we do have lots of people around the Capitol. I would like to, I'm also part of the Civic Education Coalition, working with Joellen and Amy and Jennifer Bloom. I would like to actually draw your attention to the quote on the front page of our cool one-pager. Wise words from Justice Sandra Day O'Connor: knowledge of our system of governance and our rights and responsibilities as citizens is not passed along the gene pool. Each generation of Americans must be taught these basics. We say at Youth in Government a little bit differently, that democracy must be learned by each generation, but pretty much the same words and exactly the same sentiment. We take this very seriously in our coalition. And all of us in this room, know that participation in the civic life of our state is essential to Minnesota's future success. Getting young people involved, as members of that next generation, we have a responsibility to train them and help us preserve democratic principles and institutions of our state and of our nation. The question is, why civics? Civic values are the ideals that bring us together as Minnesotans, as Americans, as people. It's how we decide how we live together and work together every single day. Our coalition lives out these values by bringing young people together from all of Minnesota to talk about important issues and practice real-life democratic skills. We bring a mix of hands-on learning and teacher resources to help strengthen the information for kids in communities and classrooms. You may also ask, why legacy? And really, why? Because good government is part of Minnesota's cultural heritage. To Jo Ellen's comment, we get that all the time. We don't want to rest on our laurels, and we hope you don't either. There's specifics on our sheet, but I would want to draw a few, draw your attention to a few youth and government items. In youth and government programs, we serve 2,400 high school students each year. They take part in prep sessions and research sessions and work sessions at their local schools and YMCAs and communities. And then they come together for these statewide events to put those democratic principles into practice. We do things that help young people become successful adults. They build skills on working with others, being responsible for their own opinions and their own work. They also learn, by the way, coming to a conference like all of us adults do, where they need to be, what time they need to be there, how they need to be prepared, how they can present themselves professionally. All important things in a grown-up world. We're all doing it today. We engage students in real-life conversations. Real life, the big stuff, not necessarily the stuff that happens in the high school cafeteria. We talk about things that matter to the people of Minnesota and to these students. And, of course, we do it at the Capitol for a lot of it as well when we take over every January, and we do government. We send you all home, we do it. We appreciate those opportunities. We appreciate support that has come in the past, and we ask for your continued support as we take democracy to the next generation. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a question. Question for members of Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my thing was just more of a comment, I guess, than a question. But I was just curious about the tie to legacy. And I agree that kind of civic participation is a big part of Minnesota, but so is swimming. Mm-hmm. We had a swimming bill. So I just kind of wanted to make that clear, because for me, the connection, while I agree with that, I'm finding a hard time making the connection to legacy, particularly when we do have so many requests. So just not really a question, but just kind of throwing that out there for consideration. So
thank you very much. Any other questions from members? Representative Erdahl, I'm very impressed to hear someone who's impressed with your teaching. That was most unexpected. I thought that would lead to a lot of questions from members, but you seem to survive.
I just came from a meeting with my superintendent from New London Spicer, too, so I was trying to pass those things on. But anyway, we have been doing legacy through this committee for, I don't know how many years, 5-6 years. And, it does make an important contribution to the civic life and education of our students in Minnesota. I will say that there also is another request of the K-12 Education Committee, but that's for another use of these that is not eligible for legacy money. So it's different funds for different uses. I want to distinguish that. I mean, in a larger sense, one of my goals, crusades, or whatever you want to call it, with my other legislation as well, has been to raise the relevance of civics education in Minnesota. The quote from Sandra Day O'Connor is very meaningful. We are in danger of losing a generation of people as far as our civics knowledge is concerned. Just repeat what some of you may have heard me say. The NAEP survey shows that 1 in 4 who graduate from Minnesota high schools are proficient in civics and government education. 3 in 4 are failing. That's a serious matter when civics and knowledge of our government is the foundation of our life in this country, really. I will say that the National College Board, the one that does the SAT, has said that there are two things that are very important to the development of a college student and of our society. One is computer science knowledge, and the other is knowledge of our Constitution. But those are the two foundational items facing our citizenry today. So with that, I would urge your support. Thank you.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much, Representative Erdahl, and thank you, guests, for coming and sticking around. Very much appreciated, and I enjoyed seeing many of those poll workers that you mentioned and the youth involved with that, and I really did notice it different this year, and I thought that was pretty neat. I don't know if our group was, my area was included, but somehow there was kids there, and it was noted, so thank you.
Are you in Ramsey County?
I am.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, Representative Erdahl renews his motion that House File 1942 be laid over for possible inclusion. So my apologies to Representative Green. Representative Zhang's going to go, and thank you for being open to that, Representative Green. Representative Zhang has some students with him, so hopefully they can get to school tomorrow and have a civics class, apparently, is what we all need. Representative Zhang, would you like to move that House File 1175 be laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes, I'd like to move that House File.
Thank you. 1175. Thank you, Representative Zhang has moved that House File 1175 is laid over and for possible inclusion. So we have your bill before us, and go ahead and get situated. And looks like he needs additional seats. We can wait. Welcome. I had an opportunity to visit with Representative Zhang earlier. I did put in a chair's request for some bubble tea, but apparently that we'll have to go across the street tomorrow. And
my apologies, Mr. Chair. As
I don't know if he heard me actually say that, but I think he did. He nodded. But
I was trying to get some, but then we had a very long session.
It would have been very thawed by now, probably.
Yeah, so my
Representative Zhang.
But I'll make sure to get you some tomorrow to make up for it. But thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today I'm presenting a bill that would support an innovative set of programs that would empower youth, that addresses intergenerational, bringing youth, young and old folks into collaboration, leveraging assets and talents in the community, elders and artists, and empowering youth into being better ambassadors, so they're not only participants, but will turn around and be able to share their culture with the community. And as you see here, I have a few guests to testify, but first I will have Tu Saiko Lee, who is community organizer from St. Paul, speak first.
Thank you, Representative Zhang. Welcome, sir. Please state your name for the record and go ahead, please.
Yeah, my name is Tu Saiko Lee from St. Paul here. So thank you, the chairman, and the rest of the members of the committee. I'm here to speak for House File 1175. Name is Tu Saiko Lee, of course, and I'm part of a generation that honors the sacrifices of our refugee parents to make an impact on our communities. I'm representing the DIAL, which is Data-Driven Initiatives Through Arts Leadership, which is formed to leverage artists to improve lives and well-being to underserved communities in Minnesota. We do use arts to preserve culture, and we do it in an intergenerational way. So just to explain a little bit, growing up in the Frogtown neighborhood, I didn't have – am I too loud? Okay. Growing up in the Frogtown neighborhood, I didn't have many role models. There wasn't many programs after school. So I vowed that when I get older, I would give back to community, help create programming for the next generation. Now, the great thing is there's a whole generation of people like me who teach too. So I found my voice in spoken word, in creative writing. And, you know, this artist found it in dance. And so for us, we believe these programs keep youth away from trouble, away from gangs, also addressing mental health concerns, being second generation of refugee parents. It gives them self-confidence and feeling empowered through understanding their language, history, and identity. So for me, I felt like I had lost my language growing up too, which leads me to my grandmother. I performed with my grandmother, who does the traditional art of Gutsia, for over 10 years. And so she would have the sunglasses on, and she improvised her poetry. So I was like, my grandma could freestyle. She's a rapper of her generation. And so for me, I saw it as making a connection to the traditional arts of the elders to our contemporary arts with like spoken word. And so with that, I realized that she didn't have the opportunity to go to school. She didn't learn how to read and write. But we have an opportunity to highlight her traditional arts. And so the sad thing is she has since passed away since in 2017. But they say when an elder passes away, it's like a library burning down. But I choose to keep my grandma's library open and honor her legacy by continuing to do this work across many different cultures for generations to come. Now, this project is a collective of teaching artists, mentors, and organizers. And we strive to develop arts programming and curriculum using songs to revitalize language, using engaging storytelling and animation to engage young people. Also to highlight the value, the significance of the traditional arts from elders. And that's where we have the collaborative intergenerational piece. This project is also helps with young people when they build confidence, they become effective leaders in the future. And it's also open to many cultural communities to bridge and collaborate. I feel like the most powerful way forward is to be in solidarity, utilizing creativity to honor culture across generations so we can be stronger, diverse communities here in Minnesota. So we would greatly appreciate your support for this bill, House File 1175.
Thank you, sir. And I was very close to my grandmother, so it's sorry about your loss. Go ahead and state your name for the record, whoever's next, whichever one of you two. And hi, welcome. Please state your name and go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee, for hearing me. My name is Gundu Emily Lee. And before we begin, I wanted to share you one of my spoken word poems. It's called Get a Grip. Who do you think you are? Hmong? American? Well, at least you can say Asian. I mean, I only ask because it seems to me you're outcasted by each community. The Hmong are ashamed you can't speak, cook, or even begin to practice their culture. And they even tell you the words, how can you be a Hmong son or daughter? And everyone else, they just assume you're Chinese. Because we come to the point to correct, but not teach. Get a grip. What happens when someone asks you, what kind of Asian are you? And you say, I'm Hmong. And they ask you, what is Hmong? And you say nothing, because you don't know. When was the last time in school you were taught your history? When was the last time you got involved in a hoop li? Can you even tell me what's your favorite dish? Or can you not even say it because it's in your native language? Get a grip. Start to ask questions, wonder why. Who, what, when, how? Or else our culture will die. Talk to your parents. They're the first step. Learn about their history, the wounds on their back. And if they don't want to, talk, then you ask again. You have to keep trying. You have to start a conversation. Because if you can start a conversation, there could be a revolution, a realization that you and the hundreds of the next generation need to get a grip. Change your mind and change their mind and save the legacy your ancestors left behind. Now, to reiterate, my name is Gun Thu Emily Lee, and I am a Hmong Asian American. But growing up, it always seemed I had to choose whether I was Hmong or I was American. I'm not good at speaking Hmong. I'm not good at writing, nor am I good at reading. And when I went to relatives' house, they always told me that my Hmong was just never good enough. And when I go over to my American side, like school, they told me, why speak Hmong? This is America. You speak English. And before I knew it, I lost my Hmong. And I was completely immersed in my American. Now, growing up in American society, I learned a few things. I learned how to enjoy reading, writing, and music. But I never understood why. Why did I enjoy those things? What made them so enjoyable? It was only until I reached high school that I finally found out why. When I entered high school, I was enrolled in the first ever Hmong class. And there, I learned from one special person, and that person is Chu Saiko. He taught me that through music, through writing and reading, you can express yourself and your culture in so many ways. He taught me the reason why I loved the reading, writing, and music. It was because they held stories. Stories that kept me immersed. That's what made me love the writing, the music. Now, it also taught me that I didn't know my story. And so, thanks to him, I decided to find out. Gun Thu Emily Lee. Father escaped the war in Laos and became a refugee. My mother abandoned a baby in the middle of a battlefield, was saved by a Laos soldier who raised her as her own daughter, as his own daughter. And I am the product of both of them. I am not Hmong, and I am not American. I am Hmong Asian American. And I was lost in two worlds. But I was able to find myself with the lessons that I've learned along the way. We need a program that can teach others how to value our culture, our stories, because they're the greatest gift anyone can receive. And with programs like Tues that incorporate activities, that engage students, that can connect with students on a deeper level besides just textbooks, can we help guide the next generation and keep all cultures alive? I just got my culture. And even though I'm a high school student, I want to stay involved. I want to grow up with it. I want to be involved in this community. So I ask, help me save this culture. Help me save all our cultures. And help me save the legacy that all our ancestors left behind. Thank you.
Wow. Wow. Thank you very much. Thank you for sharing your voice and stories. And you're an amazing young lady. Definitely a highlight of my day today. go ahead.
I was going to say, I just want to, yeah, she's a student of mine. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee for being here tonight. I know you guys have had a long day. Yeah. So my name is Kevin Vang, and I'm a teaching artist for Street Stops and Mountaintops. And I'm speaking in support of House File 1175. And so I'm just kind of here for a testimonial, and I'm a testament to and a product of, having a creative outlet. And that creative outlet is dance, specifically breakdance. And so similar to Two Cycle here, growing up on the east side of St. Paul, I was surrounded by a lot of gang violence and abuse, and also the also the cultural restrictions of having to maintain my culture but not fully understanding it, right? And so through that, I found breakdance because breakdance as a creative outlet, I had the freedom to express myself in any way I could. And even though these restrictions were put on me by my environment, it's the freedom of expression that drove me to continue to pursue dance. And so it's through these connected marginalities of we artists that I found people like Two Psych, and I joined Street Stops and Mountaintops, and it helped me understand why I should connect to my roots and find my cultural identity. And a lot of the principles in hip-hop are peace, love, unity, and having fun. And it's through these principles that, really connected me with such a diverse community and helped me create this open-mindedness into learning more. And, you know, as I pursue the arts, you know, I'm starting to understand that it's a universal language. And for people like me who are very introvert and have a tough time speaking, it's you know, these universal languages that really, you know, give us a voice. And I have a story about a student, and it kind of expands on the arts. And his name is San, and I gave him a nickname because in breakdance culture we give each other nicknames. So I call him B-Boy Sun because he's always smiling. He's very bright. And so after teaching him, you know, I taught him a couple moves. It can be very robotic, right? But it's what's in between the lines. The devil's in the details. And so I spoke to him, and he talked to me, and he told me he wanted to learn more English, right? And so because I had already established that connection with my student, you know, it kind of was a segue for him to ask me more questions and to create a more confident personality to be able to ask those kind of questions. And teaching is just, you know, it doesn't help the students only, it helps the teachers as well. And it definitely helps me learn patience, flexibility, and it's through the innocence and heart and passion of a child to learn something so much that I've learned that, you know, it's important to foster curiosity. And through fostering curiosity, we can create, you know, open-mindedness, we can create voices, we can create characters, identities, solidify their place and solidify, you know, where their heart's at. And, so it's through these after-school programs, these creative art outlet programs that is really going to pave the way for, you know, the youth of tomorrow. So thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your work as teachers. And I have a member question. Any Representative Hausman, would you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One, just to clarify the first testifier's quote that I want to save in my mind. Did I catch it correctly? When an elder dies, it's like a library burned down.
Correct.
I mean, that was one special moment. But the other, Mr. Chair, I have a confession, and that is I know that in these committee rooms we are not to applaud, but I very nearly broke into applause for the poet.
Representative Hausman, go ahead and we'll gavel you down. Go ahead. I think it would be appropriate if that's all right. Could we? I thought that was really powerful. Thank you, Representative Hausman. And any other discussion? Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, students, young people, you were here when Representative Erdahl presented his ask and about the need for civic engagement and more citizenship kind of things. Do you have any kind of response to that ask and how you might use some of the information or the things that he was trying to present in the state of Minnesota as something very important. And I'm interested in how what you thought about that ask.
Ms. Lee, is there, or whoever.
Ms. Oh, okay.
Yep.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Chair. And
don't worry about it.
Okay.
It's all good.
Answer. Sorry.
All good.
So I do believe it is important for people to know about their government and for people to understand why all this is really important. But I do believe that what goes into that is when you are open to the to like arts and music and stuff, because that's what drives the imagination, the innovation of the next generation, and that's what's going to make people get more involved in the diplomacy of how things are working in the state in the United States. It's when they get involved in these kind of activities that they can learn more and engage more, and when they know more, they will get more engaged with what America is, because America is based in our whole country. There's religion, there's a bunch of culture here, and that is the arts. That's what art is, and that is what leads us to have these amazing laws, and for me to be like here today too, amazing laws, and people who want to vote is driven by these ideals and these ideas. So I think honestly, both are really important, and you need both to succeed. So I want to stress for both.
And your friends,
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Representative. So I do believe, as an American citizen, as a Minnesota resident, we have a individual responsibility to engage in our civic duties, and I believe, you know, the arts is a good way to open up conversation for that, and through the arts we can communicate the importance of it, because like the last group stated, we might be losing a generation of active, you know, civic engagement, and I believe, you know, with leaders like you guys and leaders like us, and through the arts we can push, you know, for the responsibility of, you know, being a contributing member to society.
Thank you very much. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I believe everything that you've said, too.
Thank you very much. Representative Zhang, any final comments? Thank you for the blessings that you've given us by these kids tonight and teachers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Green, for allowing me to move up on agenda. I really appreciate it. And to Representative Murphy, thank you for that question, too. One of the reasons why I'm here is because I want to engage our youth to be participating in our democracy. And like my friend Tusako Lee over there, I've known him for many years. And when I got elected, I said, hey, did you know that arts and politics can go together? Like, for example, we can get you funding, legacy funding, for what you're doing. And so I'm very proud of the work that Tu Psycho Lee has done for the community in the last 20 years or so. He's been doing this. I've known him since I was a student at St. Olaf College. I would drive down from Northfield, Minnesota, up to the cities with my classmates just to hear a spoken word pieces from Tu Psycho and his peers. And I would really love to see his program flourish and continue impacting generations to come. That being said, Mr. Chair, thank you so much, and I urge you to support funding for this program.
Thank you, Representative Zhang, and thank you for your guests. It was a great presentation. With that, Representative Zhang renews his motion that House File 1175 be laid over for possible inclusion. So with that, it's laid over. Thank you very much for coming, and maybe you could stick around and teach us some breakdancing moves.
definitely.
Thank you very much. Representative Green, thank you for your understanding on that. And sometimes when we're members of the committee, we get kicked around a little bit. I I serve on another committee. I was left way to the end, and thinking I was next all day long, but I wasn't. But Representative Green, would you like to move that House File 1786 be laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would.
Okay. So with that, we have Representative Green's bill before us, and we have an author's amendment, the A1, and it's in our package. So if anybody has any questions, I'd like to get it in the shape that the author likes it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can talk about the bill and the amendment, unless you just want to move the amendment.
Let's move the amendment and get it in the shape that you're. Is that your intent?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So with that, Representative Green's moved his motion or moved the amendment. Any questions to that? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Representative Green, we have your bill, House File 1786, as amended before us. Thank you, Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before you get going, I just want to send my condolences to your loss that you mentioned on the House floor yesterday, and I was touched by your comments and the friendship that you obviously had with this gentleman, and I'm sorry for your loss and your communities.
Well, I appreciate that. It was a terrible blow. Yeah, and for me it was unexpected, but I think for a lot of us it was, but I appreciate those words.
Thank you, Representative Green.
House File 1786, it deals with what I would consider to be a problem, in that the 19 point whatever it is percent of the money that goes to the Arts Board. And I've got some statistics on it. You've got some stuck in your packets, and the one shows from the last biennium, the chart that shows the amount of money that goes to the Arts Board and how little goes to other programs that I think we all think are pretty important. A few things I had prepared here is talks about some of the places this money is going. First of all, this Arts Board lets this out to regional councils, and it's outside the purview of the legislature at that time, and we don't get a say in it. And so in 2015, for example, an individual was awarded a $10,000 grant for a project that included travel to the Caribbean in order to do research prior to creating oil paintings. In 2012, an individual was awarded $13,000 for a project that had the objective to create music and then perform it throughout the United States and abroad. And in Minnesota statute, art can be almost anything. I mean, if you can dream it up, it can be considered art, and I think that's kind of a problem. But using that as the definition in 2013, $10,000 went for a grant to an individual to create a series of flexible tent pole and fabric barriers for home lawns. These barriers were to be used by people who did not get along with their neighbors, and the project website, which is no longer running, was called HostileNeighbor.com. Grants that are used towards buying technology and equipment are fairly common. In 2014, the description of a $10,000 grant awarded project included upgrading a tablet, upgrading Photoshop software, purchasing a new Samsung laptop, and purchasing a digital projector. The same individual received another $10,000 grant in 2011, described with only one sentence, to nurture his career development as a children's book illustrator and to help promote literacy in the arts. And other grants like this include, but are not limited to, $6,960 in 2010 toward the purchase of equipment for presentations, $10,000 in 2014 toward purchasing digital fabrication equipment, $10,000 in 2014 for a project that includes upgrading a new computer new photography and new photography equipment. And I could go on. The one that did strike me kind of close to home, and this will be the last one I mention before we get into the bill, is a project called Thunderbird Strike. And I believe that this was geared toward Native American youth. And this this particular program, it was $3,290 to create a video game that a Thunderbird could fly through the air and use lightning to do damage to pipelines and equipment. And the reason that one hit kind of close to home for me is that we deal a lot with crime and try to keep our youth out of crime on the reservation. And when I see stuff like this, I get angry, because the last thing that we need is someone coming up and especially using state money and saying that we're going to do a video game teaching you how to do damage. The other thing I'd like to say is I think that there may be some members that have questions, but you got this in your packet. And so I want to stop just for a minute, and I want to ask if there any questions about this, because the photograph doesn't do justice, and I did block out the obscene parts of it, because I don't think that we need to show obscenity, and I certainly don't think that we should be using state dollars to promote obscenity. So I have some more things to say, but I'll open it for questions now.
So Representative Green brought our attention to the photo. It's in our packet. Representative Heitzman and some of my staff, I don't know who's all seen it, but I've kind of looked at it. So it's in there if you want to take a look at it. Is there questions for Representative Green? Representative Heitzman, I think, was first, and then Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More of a comment relative to this particular piece that Representative Green mentioned in the handout that should have been in everybody's packet. A number of weeks ago, when this particular piece was brought forward in a gallery, I started receiving emails and messages from folks in my district, and Representative Green referenced some of the adult material there, so to speak. But the thing that struck my constituents, and I heard from them more often than not on as they were messaging me and knew that I was on this committee and thought that there might be relevant to the State Arts Board, was the depiction of our, I'm assuming, and I've been told, law enforcement community here in the piece. And that started a larger conversation. And I think there's some things that may be open to interpretation, but then there's others that are pretty clear, and you can all be judged for yourselves. As I visited with the folks at the State Arts Board, and they can speak for themselves, and they're here, and they may want to do that, and I would welcome that. The reaction that I received was, well, we don't want to censor art, and I get that. We don't want to put ourselves in a position where we would be maybe standing in between someone and their First Amendment rights. There again, I get that. The issue isn't a discussion about privately funded art or self-funded art. We're talking about publicly funded art, right? And I think it's interesting, we had a couple of testifiers here tonight, and it might be almost fortuitous, yes, to a certain extent. I heard when we were discussing some other controversial projects that have been done that caused some really hard feelings. And this specifically was while we were discussing House File 1348. One of the testifiers said specifically that the
Representative Heitzman, can you, what is, what number, or what was it? I'm sorry.
We were discussing 1348, House File 3. There was
okay,
a test
thank
fire.
You, thank you, thank you.
I was very worried. I thought I was being cut off, but you're very good. Lenient. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll get to it. That there was a reaction, a specific reaction that the artists wanted when they created something that was somewhat controversial relative to our friends in the Native American community. And that particular piece, as I did a little Google search, was funded privately. And I think that here we are, we have a piece that was funded publicly that depicts my friends in the law enforcement community, and I would think it's fair to say all of our friends, as Nazis being backed up by the KKK. And that's what's drawn the criticism. And I'm going to go back to the beginning where I said I think that we're tasked with a difficult situation where the State Arts Board does have to make a judgment. Now, some people would say that's censorship, and they have to decide which art is funded and which art isn't funded. Maybe there needs to be a process to review these kind of things. Obviously, this piece wasn't created and then funded. It was funded and then created. If that can't happen, I think we need to look much more closely, and as I brought it up, it doesn't sound like there's an interest, at least that I've heard so far from decision makers, to work on a process maybe after the fact. But if that can't happen, then we do need something like what Representative Green has brought forward, I think. If there can't be a solution to some of this controversial stuff, and I've said a lot, and I apologize, Mr. Chair, for going on, but there may be more discussion relative to that. There may not.
To that point, Representative Heitzman, I'm not against the discussing this piece, but I'm just, and I know the Arts Board may have had, I don't know, is this Legacy Dollars? I don't know that I've ever heard that it was Legacy Dollars related to this piece. Not saying that a problem couldn't happen with Legacy Dollars, I'm just saying, but I don't think this was particularly, was it? Do we know? I mean,
as I understand it, Mr. Chair, the gentleman that received these dollars did get Legacy Dollars, and there was no way to track, you know, there's no way once he gets them to track whether or not they came from one source or the other. So there was legacy funding that went to this person, as I understand it.
Okay, thank you. I don't know. Representative Erdahl, we'll move back to you, Representative Heitzman, later if you have other questions.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think at this point we should bring Sue Jens up. We had a conversation, Representative Heitzman and I did earlier, about the funding of this, and I don't think there's legacy money involved, but we should probably hear directly from her.
Okay. Representative Erdahl's asked that Ms. Jens comes up. Why don't you come up? We have other member questions, but we'll go with this for now. And Ms. Jens, welcome to our committee. State your name, and you kind of have heard the discussion. And
thank you, Mr.
Chair. I don't know if you want to respond or just kind of.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Sue Jens. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Arts Board. I've had the pleasure to be here in the past. I'll respond specifically to the question, which is that no, the project that Mr. Denemy did was not funded with legacy dollars. That was he is an Anishinaabe artist who received an artist initiative grant, but it did not have legacy dollars in it.
Right. Thank you. And Representative Heitzman, I think, has a question to this question.
I do, Mr. Chair. So my question for the director would be, are you familiar with initiative grants? I'm sure you are, but I'm just confirming.
Ms. Jens, I didn't hear the question myself. I'm sorry. What was it?
Initiative grants. Is the director familiar with an initiative, artist initiative grant?
Okay. Ms. Jens?
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, yes, I am. That's one of our grant programs.
Okay. Just want to go through the chair here.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Heitzman, thank you. We were on, I feel bad because Representative Erdahl was actually had the floor, sort of, but I don't know if he kicked the can a little bit down. But
Mr. Chairman, all I want to do is have
some clarification.
And clarify, and it's fine for Representative Heinzman to continue on.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Earl. Representative Heitzman, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for messing up the flow of things there a little bit. The reason that I'm bringing it up is because we were able to look through the website and confirm or information and confirm that the artist has that the artist initiative grant is has funded the Standing Rock painting, as I understand it. Or I guess the way to ask more specifically would be, has the artist initiative grant received legacy funding? How about that? That's probably the better way to say it.
Ms. Jentz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, let me back up just a little bit. It might be helpful to talk about the program first and that specific grant so that all of the committee has the background. The Arts Board funds individual artist projects. The maximum any artist can request is $10,000. Our process is that an artist asks for what they need, and if they score highly enough, they get the amount that they ask for. So we don't second guess them on an amount. In the Artist Initiative Grant Program, the one that Representative Heinzman is asking about, we have three sources of funding that we have in that program. We use general fund dollars, and we use federal dollars, because those were the original sources of funds for the program. When legacy dollars became available, we added legacy to the program as well to supplement what we were able to do with general funds. So we have all three sources in the program. But in the grant to Mr. Denemy, it's only general fund dollars and federal dollars. There are no legacy dollars in that particular grant.
Thank you. Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what I need to better understand is how you differentiate between Arts Initiative program dollars and these other sources of funding that you're saying don't touch, because we're having a hard time seeing how you can actually prove that. And I'm not trying to be obnoxious, I just want to be very clear, because there's more questions about this. The accounting may be complicated, but how do you differentiate between those dollars?
Ms. Jentz, and my apologies as a chair too, because I feel like maybe we should have had a more thorough arts discussion on a, you know, not on your bill necessarily, but almost more of a, on a broader issue of the grant programs, and just because there's amazing things that are going on. I know there's a lot of requests, so it's, you know, anyways. But Ms. Jentz, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Sorry. Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, the way that we know which dollars are in which grant is that in the state's accounting system, we need to charge every dollar to an account. So if you go into the state's SWIFT system, it will show that this particular grant to Mr. Denemy has federal dollars and it has state general fund dollars. So we're assigning dollars to the grants. Even though there are three sources of funds that go into the program, in this particular case, only two of those sources were used to pay for that grant.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the latitude. I would make the argument that it's more difficult than what we're hearing. Now, that's my opinion, and we could have a more detailed discussion. It might make sense to have a hearing specifically relative to this issue. I leave that up to your judgment, Mr. Chair, because I do think it is more difficult than what's being described, and I think it's possible to make a very strong argument that legacy money was involved in this particular piece. Now, that being said, Representative Green brought up a number of concerns not specific to this one.
Right.
And so I want to thank him for that, because I do think it's important that we have that conversation, and while I mentioned this earlier, while I'm glad that we're very cautious as to how we decide what is and isn't funded, I do think that we need to differentiate between art that is funded privately versus publicly, and that's where there's been some real challenges as people look at this and try to figure out what is the process and how are these decisions being made, because there's definitely art that is, or projects that are funded, and projects that aren't. So some would describe that as censorship, some would describe that as just, that's a process. And if we're not going to have that conversation, well, then there's going to be folks that say we could pick, you know, just projects out of a hat. What is the role of the State Arts Board if they're not evaluating projects and making a decision, a judgment, or even you could say censoring one project over another?
Representative Heitzman, thank you. Representative Wasilek?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Representative Heitzman on some of the, you know, concerns about maybe how the State Board is doing, Arts Board is doing things, but I think that they're the ones equipped to do that because they have been doing this and they know what they're doing. But I think an important point to make in this discussion is that there are always going to be things that we don't want to fund, right? Like, there are things I don't think we should be funding. There are things that are controversial or offensive to some people that we don't think we should be funding. I won't mention my personal opinions on that, but I think that that's something that to keep in mind, is that there are going to be things that we don't like, that we disagree with. That's part of this process of having a legislature and having a deliberative process, is that we end up funding things we don't always like or agree with. And I think that we don't just say, well, we're not going to fund this anymore, or we're not going to give it money, or at least if we're doing that, we shouldn't be doing that. I think the process needs to be perhaps having a discussion, a broader discussion about these issues or these concerns, and not just saying because we don't like it or there's some offensive stuff that we just kind of change that process or get rid of the funding. So that's just something that I wanted to point out.
Mr. Chair, yeah. And Representative Wasilek, it's not quite that simple. It really isn't. We have the legacy account, and every single person that buys anything in Minnesota pays into this account. And we were elected as representatives of the people. And it's our job to see where this money goes, and it's our job to see that it is going to places where the people who elected us believe it should be going. And my bill, actually, well, let me step back. Some years ago, the Arts Board was successful in getting 47% of the arts and cultural heritage money to go to these type of grants. And in the meantime, if you look at the chart, you'll see how many of the educational things that we have out there that are doing very good work are suffering. You know, you've got the Children's Museum, about $2 million. Well, the Arts Board is getting $58 million, and we have no say over that. But the Children's Museum has to come to us and ask for their $2 million. What my bill says is the 47% with the amendment goes into appropriations under the section made by the legislature, and priority must be given to grants to school districts, charter schools, and accredited non-public schools and non-profit organizations partnering with or creating content for school districts, charter schools, and accredited non-public schools. Okay, so what we're saying is, and by the way, whether they can make the case that legacy funds didn't go into this or not, this is perfectly acceptable to the Arts Board. This is under the definition of art. So which is better? Is it better to do the Children's Museum and put this money into classrooms where we can further that, or dump it out there for this? And that's what we have to decide. And that is what we were elected for. So to say that we shouldn't be making these choices is completely false.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did read the bill, so I do know what's in there. And I think it's important that we have arts opportunities across the state for a variety of people to engage in. Again, I don't think my point, to your point, we are stewards of all of the taxpayer money. The legacy dollars and all of the taxpayer money that comes into the general fund and all of these different ways that we get money from folks in the state of Minnesota to support what we're doing here. And I just think that I don't disagree with what you're doing, but I think that the problem is that these funds are going all over the state to different sorts of arts organizations. And, you know, I've personally seen some of the plays and some of the presentations that have been funded by the legacy money through the Arts Board. And I don't think that we should limit the audience for these opportunities because of some things that we don't like or don't think the Arts Board should be doing. Again, I'm open to a conversation about if this is going on, if there are some other discussions we can have, but that's, I mean, we, again, we're stewards of all of this money, legacy money and other money, and we make decisions about this all the time.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. I think we're all be good to remind ourselves that we're all here and care about and take our jobs very serious. So let's just be just nice about it if we can. Ms. Jens.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much. I just wanted to possibly give another thought about all of this. The reason that the Arts Board has received a larger percentage of the legacy amendment of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund specifically is because this is what we were created to do. The State Arts Board exists as a mechanism for all of you, an extension of your work, because there are 1,700 arts organizations in the state of Minnesota. There are 30,000 artists in the state of Minnesota. There are human service programs, there are senior centers, and there are others that are creating arts programs. And one possibility would be that all 1,700 of those would be here presenting their case to you, and all 30,000 of those artists would be here presenting their case to you. And one of the things that would happen is that it would be perhaps even easier for Metro organizations and individuals to be funded than Greater Minnesota because of access to the capital and being able to be here at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night. So part of the reason that that we have had a larger share of the funds is because as an extension of your work, you have another public body whose job it is to make these decisions and to be accountable for those decisions. We just recently had an Office of the Legislative Auditor's report of our grants administration. They found no misuse. They gave us input into things that we could do better to document some of our work, but they did not find misuse of the funds. We are a state agency, so to your point, Representative Green, we are accountable for that. It is our job, like yours, to review applications, to make the very best decisions about how to allocate the dollars. Not all of those projects can be funded, but we do hope that what we're doing is providing a service that gets those arts dollars out all across the state of Minnesota.
Ms. Jens, real quick, just say, how many boards around the state that are doing these decisions?
Mr. Chair, there's the Arts Board. There are 11 regional arts councils, and together we cover the entire state. There is no county that doesn't have a regional arts council that covers the state. Legacy dollars we have made as a system. We've made 14,000 grants since 2010. Those grants have reached 100 million people. And to Representative Wasilewicz's point, there are a few that people have not been happy with, but in almost 10 years and almost 100 million people, it's a very few. And we do take every dollar seriously. We do understand that not everything we do will appeal to everyone. But as Representative Heinzman and I discussed a few weeks ago, the way our system is set up, we're trying to broadly fund the arts so that there is something that everyone can find that's meaningful to them. Even if there are certain things that may not appeal to me or may not appeal to another person, that's not the only thing that's being funded. So that's what we are trying to do.
Thank you, Ms. Jens. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comment or question isn't specifically to this bill, but what I heard you suggest, and that is maybe
maybe we should have had this conversation in a broader discussion because, for example, I know there are tensions in other places. The first project we had tonight, mm-hmm. which was the Prince mural, that if it doesn't fit. And what I worry about is, a committee can always get entrenched and we just say, well, we always do that. Mm-hmm. And because we always do that, that's what we do the next year. And so, I think there's something to be said for occasionally having a more open conversation that says, here's what we've traditionally done. Are we covering the bases? I mean, if it is to protect the legacy, are these the best ways? But maybe not necessarily in the context of just one bill or one idea. And so that's sort of an open question to you. Because I'm new to legacy, for example, am I seeing this correctly? Now, these are the award. These are what just were announced for the 2019. Is that what this summary is?
Yeah, I believe so, year to date.
Mr. Chair, but this is this correct that roughly in 2018-19 that $58 million would have gone to the State Arts Board?
Yes, and then, excuse me, Mr. Chair. Yes, that is true.
This
year,
sorry.
I believe, I don't know if the numbers are in because of the forecast, but I believe this year that goes up to $66 million.
So, Representative Hausman,
that's... Mine is just generally, because I'm new to it, mm-hmm. You get the sense that that we're already writing the bill because we always do this, we always give to these people, and, I think occasionally, especially with dollars like this, that it's helpful for us maybe to have some committee discussions in a broader context.
Right. Thank you, Representative Hausman. We do have some newer members, some legacy members, if you will, two former chairs. So they call them legacy members. But it's, I think the chairs before me have often, and there is a, the set commitment to the 47%, and part of it was discussed by Ms. Jentz, why to do that, because there are so many organizations that are from one end of the state to the other, and I think, sometimes there might be a perception that that it's not done fairly, or I think they've really done. I've had an opportunity to be educated on some of the. Because I've asked some of the questions on how are we doing, in particular with like our minority groups or whatever. Well, I hear from them that they're actually overachieving, or they're not overachieving, but that's not the right word. But it's, if you were just simply by demographics, perhaps you might call it overachieving. But they're actually doing a good job. You look at their boards, and the board is not all a bunch of Caucasian people. It's actually a majority that are making board decisions. For example, I learned the other day. So it's not even, what you might, if you just thought about it right away, you just might think it's, a bunch of white people or something. I don't know. There's a lot of education that we can do and learn, and we can definitely do a better job too of reaching out, but I think they've been really good stewards. But out of 14,000 grants, there's gonna there's a possibility. It's a if you had 14,000 employees, one of the employees might not live up to the standard that you might want, or so there might be some. And Representative Green is accurate on some of those that might have fallen short or not be what they are. I don't think this piece was legacy. Myself from my studies and whatever, but that doesn't diminish the argument, I guess, in my mind, because there's still a possibility that an artist could make a mistake. But also earlier today we learned from testimony that the Native community doesn't feel like they're being heard, and this might be a way. It's a Native artist, and this artist might be expressing things that is a voice to them, to their community, that I don't understand as a traditional Caucasian person. So be given this opportunity to tell this story that we might not consider, is that all bad? I don't know. So that's what art's kind of about, and I think You know, we all struggle with that. And I know your hand's been really wiggling.
I know, because, Mr. Chair, maybe you misunderstood. I was absolutely not talking either about the State Arts Board or this bill. What I was saying is, just as a new entrant, it's sort of all funding, not what we're talking about here, that I sometimes get the feeling, well, that's what we always do. And that doesn't leave room for something new. You know, one of mine was the railroad bells that a gentleman in Staples wishes he could take to the Union Depot. I mean, so there are other projects out there of protecting legacies. And so I was really talking about a broader discussion than either this bill or the State Arts Board.
Well, perhaps, you know, in some ways you could probably argue that Representative Murphy probably had the easiest task and the hardest task, but you know, she had a clean slate to work with. But then, you know, there's many challenges with that too when you actually start thinking about it. You know, of what, you know, how you're going to drive this ship. I'm sure Representative Erdahl faced other challenges. I know I'm faced in the arts and cultural component some challenges. So, but I'm sorry if you feel like you haven't been educated. I don't know what we could do differently. No, but I mean to, right. Representative Heitzman, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, again. So, Representative Hausman's comments brought up a few thoughts in my mind as well. And I don't know if I can say it better than one of the testifiers earlier tonight, so I'm just going to read what I heard that individual say, which was, through the arts, we can build common ground. And that got me thinking, you know, maybe we need to be revisiting the mission statement of the Arts Board. If things, now we can say, we can argue probably all night whether or not this was funded through legacy dollars or not, but technically, irregardless to that point, it was funded with tax dollars. And my point would simply be, maybe we need to look through a different lens, as Representative Hausman may have been, if I'm understanding what you were saying, that we don't necessarily have to do things just because that's what the way it was done in the past. And maybe part of that would be revisiting a mission statement through the discussion we had tonight. Might lead to that, might not. But I'm just going to say again, because I think it's so profound, through the arts we can build common ground. I don't think this is building common ground. That's my perspective. It might be different for somebody else, as the chair was mentioning moments ago. But when I talked to my, like I said, my friends in law enforcement, they definitely don't feel as though common ground is being built when they're depicted as Nazis. So my question, since Director Jens is still here, let's just go ahead and assume that the process does work. And let's just say we are talking about legacy dollars. And I'm assuming I'm going to get a equivocal answer, but I don't want to assume, so I'm going to go ahead and ask. Would something like this make it through the State Arts Board process as it exists today, or would it be censored?
Ms. Jens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinzman, as you and I have discussed, and I'll share with the whole committee, we don't commission works of art, so we don't know what a piece of art will look like. We don't know what a play will look like when it's produced. We don't know what a concert will be when we fund it. We don't know what an organization will choose to do with the dollars that we provide to them. We are investing in artists that can produce quality work, and we are investing in projects that they can describe as meaningful to them and to a community that they want to reach. So whether a particular painting would ever be funded or not, I mean, that isn't a part of our process. Our process is more about who is the artist, what does the artist have to express, what is the organization, what do they have to express, what are the stories that they would like to tell, who is telling those stories. And so I don't know that I'm answering your question the way you would like me to answer it, but I'm answering it in the best way I can, which is that we have citizen review committees who review the applications and invest in artists that produce quality work and in projects that they think can reach an audience that maybe isn't being reached.
Thank you, Ms. Gents. Representative Heisman?
I'm not going to ask more questions. I'm just going to leave it there. I think that what I'm hearing is that there isn't a process to choose art that allows people to build common ground. That's what I'm hearing. And it might sound unfair, but if the process can't differentiate between something that's going to be incredibly offensive to people, and one of the project discussions tonight, bill discussions centered around an incredibly controversial project that was funded through private money, but offensive nonetheless. And people responded to that, and there was a reaction that I think was appropriate. It was taken down and burned. And in this case, we're being told there's nothing that can be done. This is going to be funded one way or the other. Taxpayers really don't have any say in this. In fact, legislators seemingly don't have any say in this. And so Representative Green's bill may be more relevant than ever if the process doesn't work. If there's no way to prevent art that's going to be divisive as opposed to art that builds common ground, I would argue that we need Representative Green's bill.
Thank you, Representative Heitzman. Representative Zhang, we're getting toward... Nope.
Very short, Mr.
No,
Chair.
Go ahead.
I just want to note that...
Be the final question, though.
This is art. This is the reality of what some communities have to live through. And just because you don't like what they live through does not mean we should diminish what art is. You got an issue with this problem? How about try tackling the issue hands-on so we don't see arts like this coming out? How about addressing the issues communities of color, indigenous communities, face every day, daily? Just somehow because you don't like the art does not mean that the First Amendment does not apply to arts. That is not art. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to respond to that.
Yes.
All right.
Representative Green, and thank you, Representative Green. Go ahead.
Mr.
Final
Chair
comments,
and Representative Zhang. I've been a member, I'm a member of the White Earth Nation. I've lived there all my life. All right? And I can tell you that stuff like you're talking about there doesn't do anybody any good. Nobody benefits from that. And I'll tell you why. We're already dealing with things in our community, and I'm sure you deal with them too. With people that are divisive, there's bigotry, there's hatred. Do you think that this is going to change that? Do you think this is going to make that better? You're inspiring hatred.
Representative Green and
hate. Do you realize,
Representative Zhang,
that this is the reality of what people are going through?
Representative Zhang,
there's no reality.
Representative Green, I mean, we've got a lot to discuss, and you guys can talk about it afterwards. I'll buy the beverage if you like. But Representative Green, do you have final comments you'd like to make?
I do. First of all, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for hanging.
We brought up the auditor's report. There must have been something there to comment on. I saw you go get your pen. But I think it was a pretty good report.
What I would say...
In the scheme of all the reports you've seen.
Well, what I would say, Mr. Chair, is...
Representative Green.
If you look at the definition of art is broad. And so these things qualify as a definition of art. So there is no crime that's being done here. What my bill does is say, you know, we shouldn't be advocating our authority on this money because we have the authority. The 47% to the Arts Board was not on the ballot when this bill was passed. That's a decision of the legislature. And we can change that decision if we want. And what my bill does is says, you know, if you believe that more money should be going into real education to children, then this is what we should be doing. I just think that, and the other comment that was made with the Legacy Committee might have to listen to more testimony. Well, that's why we're here. I mean, the Capital Investment Committee does it. They do tours. They're trying to be responsible where they spend their money. We should do the same. I don't think that's asking too much. And I will also say that the legacy has been around now for 10 years.
And I think 25 years was too much because it didn't give us a chance to step back and look and see what was working and what isn't. And we've got that now for 15 more years. And after 10 years, I think at least as a legislature, we should be able to step back and say, we think that some of this money could go somewhere else and be better served. But in that, Chairman Lilly, thank you again for hearing my bill.
Yeah, thank you, and Representative Green, and I'm impressed that you came in. I understand you're under the weather, and so I'm impressed. With that, Representative Green removes his motion that House File 1786 be laid over for possible inclusion. So we've laid your bill over. Thank you, sir. And Representative Murphy, thank you. I know you had, I'm sorry I couldn't make your committee, and my apologies. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I just, before we leave tonight, I just want to think about what's happened here tonight and has happened for the last 10 years. The discussion that's taken place in the House of Representatives by creating a legacy committee. House Speaker Kelleher was so wise to create a separate committee for the legacy funds and for the hours, hundreds of hours, that dedicated representatives that were assigned to the committee or chose the committee or begged for the committee have willingly spent and brought these ideas to the forefront and have expressed their feelings and have given the people of Minnesota so many opportunities to suggest what should be done. Just as tonight, we got more suggestions, and then we can talk about them. And the quality of work that we have put together over the 10 years to bring us to this point, to starting to winnow down to present the very best bill, with hopefully including the things that we had last year that were stymied altogether from another body that doesn't have a committee, doesn't have these discussions, doesn't give the opportunity to the people of the state in anywhere in comparison. So we come in every year loaded with the excitement and the vision that they have never even tried to see. But yet each year we have come through with things that people are proud of all over the state, and the hundreds of thousands of people that have attended things that never would have if we hadn't created the guide and the principles and the outcomes, and we review them every single year. We can't forget that, and we can't leave with the idea that this isn't successful. But of course, it can become more successful, and it's our job to carry on because we have 15 more years to go. Congratulations, everyone.
Any other comments? Seeing none, I just want to thank members. I do actually appreciate the discussion, and I know it's not always easy. You know, I think we have differing thoughts and different visions or whatever. And but I think at the end we'll try our best to have the best product, and I think we're all going to have things we like and don't like. You know, especially by the time we deal with the Senate, but. Again, I want to thank you all for the discussion, and hopefully we can do it respectfully and work on some of that. I want to thank our staff for being here tonight and staying late. Very much appreciated. So with that, we are adjourned. Thank you, members.